I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, May 4th, 2015. Would you all please stand and rise and have a moment of silence with us for the brave men and women who sacrifice every day for our freedoms? Thank you. Fire Chief Lieberman, will you lead us in the flag salute tonight?
Ready? Pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir. Please be seated. Thank you, sir. Roll call, Donna.
Here.
Thank you, Donna. And before we go any further, I do want to acknowledge former Mayor Debbie Peterson has joined us this evening. And then City Attorney, will you read our closed session items, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. At the last meeting, the Council met in closed session on one item, and that's Santa Maria Valley water litigation, and there were no reportable actions taken in closed session.
Very good. Thank you, sir. At this point, the Council will review the agenda, the order of business to be conducted, and receive requests or make announcements regarding any changes to the order of the day. Do any Council members want to change the order of the agenda as presented by staff? If not, seeing none, that's up to motion.
So moved.
Okay, there is a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we will move forward on the agenda as presented by staff. I believe there are extra copies of the agenda on the table on toward the entrance to the room. So let's move on to our ceremonial calendar. And the first one is a proclamation that is declaring May 9th, 2015 as Letter Carriers Food Drive Day. And this proclamation will be read by Council Member Nichols.
Proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring Saturday, May 9, 2015 as Letter Carriers Food Drive Day. Whereas every year on the second Saturday in May, letter carriers across the country collect non-perishable food as part of the nation's largest one-day food drive, distributing the donations to local food banks. And whereas the letter carriers Stamp Out Hunger food drive is just one example of how letter carriers work to make a difference in the lives of those they serve. Since the pilot drive was held in 1991, more than 1 billion pounds of food have been collected. And whereas we would like to recognize all letter carriers for their hard work and their commitment to their communities. All of the food collected in our community stays in our community, and we support carriers' efforts to help those in need in our community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim May 9, 2015 as Letter Carriers Food Drive Day in the City of Grover Beach, and encourage the citizens of our community to support the food drive by placing non-perishable food items in or near your mailbox on Food Drive Day. Your letter carrier will pick it up while delivering the mail, and together we can help all those in need.
Very good, and I think we have two individuals here this evening. Pam Williams is a Grover Beach resident and a letter carrier to Grover Beach homes and businesses, as well as Colleen Regan, who is an Arroyo Grande resident and a carrier instructor for the United States Postal Service. Would you ladies like to come up and say a few words?
Do I get embarrassed now or later? Okay, you said some of the things that I was supposed to say, so I'll just skip over those. As you have proclaimed, the 23rd Annual Stamp Out Hunger Letter Carrier Drive will be held Saturday, May 9th. The Postal Service joins the National Association of Letter Carriers to make a difference in helping to feed America's hungry. This year, we hope to surpass the 72.5 million pounds of food collected in 2014. In fact, the residents of the five cities donated over 10,000 pounds in 2014. By issuing this proclamation, you are helping us to spread the word by encouraging the residents of Grover Beach to participate in our annual food drive. The need continues to grow in our country. One in six Americans, including 16 million children, live in households that experience hunger or the risk of hunger. On behalf of all the letter carriers in the five cities area, thank you for helping to stamp out hunger. Thank you.
Thank you both. And I think, would you like to come up and receive the proclamation? And we'll get a photo if you want to come to the center. So next we have a proclamation declaring May 2nd through the 10th as the National Travel and Tourism Week. I believe this one is going to be read by Councilmember Shaw.
Proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring National Travel and Tourism Week for May 2nd through the 10th, 2015. Whereas travel has a positive effect on California and the nation's economic prosperity and image abroad, it also impacts business productivity and the well-being of individual travelers, and whereas travel to and within the United States provides significant economic benefits for the nation, generating more than $2.1 trillion in economic output in 2014, with $927.9 billion spent directly by travelers, and whereas travel is among the largest private sector employers in the United States, supporting 15 million jobs in 2014, including 8 million directly in the travel industry and 7 million in other industries, and whereas travelers spending directly generated tax revenues of $141.5 billion for federal, state, and local governments, funds used to support essential services and programs, and whereas international travel to the United States is the nation's number one services export. In 2004, travel generated $220.6 billion in exports, creating a $74 billion trade surplus for the United States. And whereas meetings, events, and incentive travel are core business functions that help companies strengthen business performance, educate employees and customers, and reward business accomplishments, which in turn boost the U.S. economy. In 2014, domestic and international business travelers spent $283 billion. And whereas leisure travel, which accounts for more than three-quarters of all trips taken in the United States, spurs countless benefits to travelers' health and wellness, creativity, cultural awareness, education, happiness, productivity, and relationships, and whereas travel is a pillar of economic growth, creating jobs at a faster rate than other sectors. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim the week of May 2nd through 10th, 2015 as National Travel and Tourism Week in the City of Grover Beach.
Very good, and I believe we have Mr. Chuck Davison, who is the President and CEO of Visit San Luis Obispo.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council Members. First, let me thank you for the opportunity to be here. Second, let me thank Council Member Shaw for reading that as opposed to myself having to do it. So, it's a long proclamation. This is National Tour and Travel Week. This is the 32nd year this is celebrated by the United States. A couple quick highlights for us here locally. San Luis Obispo County visitor spending increased to $1.44 billion this year. That's a 3.6% increase over 2013. As all of you know, tourism is one of the largest economic drivers here in our county. Additionally, tourism employment in SLO County reached 17,160 employees. And that's a special note there. We crossed 17,000 employees in our county allocated into tourism for the first time ever in our history. So this is, again, a growing portion of our economy. Also, we recorded 8.6% average increase in transit occupancy tax for the county for 2013-2014 fiscal year. So some great indicators on tourism moving forward. This group has been very supportive. We believe that this ties in directly with the tourism marketing district that this group heard in front of your board back in January and approved. We've received unanimous approval through all the city councils, and we're in front of the Board of Supervisors on June 10th for the last hearing at what we hope will be approved so that we can create a tourism marketing district for the entire county. In addition to that, we will be celebrating National Tour and Travel Week this coming Friday at 8:30 in the morning. We will have a great presentation at the Atascadero City Hall where we'll have a few featured guest speakers. Jim Rogers, who's the CEO of Campgrounds for America, along with Carolyn Batetta, who is the president and CEO of Visit California, our statewide tourism organization, will be the keynote speakers. And then we will round out the day at 2 o'clock with a reception down in Pismo Beach and on the beach in front of the Sea Venture, where there's going to be a great artist rendition in the sand of some tourism aspects, and then we will raise a glass to toast tourism and what it does for our county. We'd like to invite all of you as council members and the mayor, city officials, and those involved in tourism to come and participate with us. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here tonight, and thank you for the proclamation.
Thank you, Mr. Davidson. Okay, we're going to move on to public communication. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. I do have two speaker request forms for public comment. The first is Kenneth McDaniel.
My name is Kenneth McDaniel. I'm a small business owner here. My office is right above the Station Grill on Grand Avenue, and I overlook the Grand Avenue Highway 1 intersection. And I've had the office for approximately a year and a half, and during that time I've noticed countless amounts of near accidents and accidents within that intersection. The accidents are mostly occurring because the person traveling westward on Grand Avenue is taking a left turn at the green light without allowing the person traveling eastward on Grand, not yielding to the person traveling eastward on Grand Avenue. Approximately 2 weeks ago, there was an accident wherein I saw a pregnant lady injured during the one of these accidents, and it's spurred me to come here and address you and request that some sort of action be taken to make this intersection safer. I know that I don't understand the process here with the city government very well, and that's why I'm here now. But I would ask that at some point on the agenda it be placed, if this is the proper avenue for doing so, a request that a left turn yield on green sign be placed on the in the intersection, so that those persons taking a left turn on Grand Avenue onto Highway 1 going west at least are aware that they need to be yielding to oncoming traffic. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McDaniel. Debbie Peterson.
Mayor and council members, I'm Debbie Peterson from the city of Grover Beach. I should say I live in the city of Grover Beach. And I came last week or last meeting to speak, and you were so busy, I decided probably it was best put off. And so I'm sorry now because Councilmember Bright's not here, but hopefully she's watching on TV. So on September 15th, 2014, the City Council adopted its Carbon Action Plan. It described an error in vehicle miles traveled and acknowledged that that error would be corrected later. Staff explained, and I've documented all the audio, you all have that, and transcribed, that most of the Carbon Action Plan measures are already being implemented to varying degrees. Staff and the Planning Commission chair said if vehicle miles traveled is overstated, it inflates the greenhouse gas emissions overall. That could increase the number of measures that need to be taken by the Planning Commission in the city. It would make meeting our reductions in 2035 very challenging. It makes meeting our reductions in 2020 so simple that we would delay taking the necessary action. It will delay getting on the right path. So when I went to the Air Pollution Control District back in March now, a grant to help cities with Carbon Action Plan measures came up. And so when public comment opened, I decided I'd stand up and say something about that. And so when at the last council meeting, your representative said, Debbie Peterson came and she spoke, she said, for Grover Beach, and she was putting it out there that we maybe didn't need any additional assistance, I was shocked. Because I'd said just the opposite, and I've given you the audio, and I've written down what I said. So transcribed, I said, thank you for bringing forward doing some funding for the cities. For Grover Beach, funding is always critical. I wouldn't want to ask you not to fund any of the things they need to do. The issue that we had in Grover Beach was, if we're not measuring correctly, how do we know if we're succeeding? So I'm speaking as past mayor and past member of the APCD board and just explaining that and asking when will those numbers be updated. And then Mayor Scholes went on to accuse me of claiming to represent the city when I do not. He told the council representative, we'll talk offline. I want to make sure that people are not representing, that they represent the city if they are not on the city council. We want to be very clear about those sort of things. So Bob, city manager, you and I will have a conversation and we'll report back to the council. So why does that matter? Well, it matters for two reasons. None of us want to be misquoted by elected officials in a public forum. None of us wish to think that if we speak up during public comment that at a subsequent meeting, under color of authority from the dais on television, our elected representatives may accuse us of misrepresentation and themselves misrepresent what we've said. But the bigger picture and why I stood up is, will you be acting on accurate information when the Carbon Action Plan program is rolled out nationally? Can the public trust what they're told? Thank you very much.
Steve Green.
Steve Green, I live on North 7th Street here in Grover Beach. Pardon me? I want my 5 seconds back. I'm here about water. We got a letter from the city several years ago that said that the cost of water was going to go up 60%. Caused quite a dilemma in my household, and we knew that something was going to have to be done. We did get the first bill that reflected that 60% increase, and we instantly put that together with it wasn't going to get better. We'd been in a drought in this state for some time up at that point. So it was a great excuse for me to shut off all of the water going to the grass because my children had grown and gone, and I was done with that chore and the cost of it. So I have a 75 by 150-foot lot. I turned off immediately. 800 square feet of grass was done. I did some reduction in other areas that I was using, and we saw that reflected in our usage. The next year, I said that we removed 5 hibiscus plants. All the areas where we had annuals that took water were taken out. And these are probably 400 to 500 square feet in total. The hibiscus plants had been there for a long time. I took them out. They were replaced with succulents and cactus, and that was what we did this year. That year. The following year, we turned off the water to the apple trees that don't do well in Grover anyway, but I had tried to have apple trees in the backyard, and I believe that was the year that I got a notification from the city again that the cost of water was going to have to reflect a 10% reduction in the previous year. Standard form. I looked at it. I said, there's no way they're going to stick me to one based on what was used last year, which is the year I turned off the trees, and my wife and I were the only ones living there, and we spent 2 weeks out of the country on pleasure and had to spend another 2 weeks away. So over the course of that year, there was only 11 months that anyone lived there. I thought that it would all be worked together, and there was no way somebody was going to pick a year and go, that's the year. Until I saw someone in who was running for election, and I went down, and I think the quote that I remember and panicked me was, someone said, oh, we're in a drought. Everybody's got to reduce 10% from last year. And I knew then that there was going to be a problem and that I was not going to be able to reduce 10% because I'd already done that. My last water bill was $500 based on less water than my neighbors use, and last water bill was $500. I now have a son living in the house, and he has a son living in the house. So I'm supposed to come up with a basis based on a year that I had done significant outdoor work. My wife and I were the only ones there, and we were gone for a month. So I'm not sure what will go on in the future, but $500 a month, I'm paying significantly more per unit than anybody else in the city or anybody else who is in my position is paying that. But it can't go on. I can't afford it. So at some point, I'm sure there's going to be some resolution by which I don't have to pay extra because I had already been conserving. Is that over? I have 41 seconds.
It's actually over, but I gave you
Thank
more time.
You. I really appreciate that. So I don't know what to do. I can't move forward. I can't reduce more. I have nothing left to do. And with 75 by 100 feet, 50 feet, if I don't put something down, I put a new deck on, I've covered, and I have the long area that had the beautiful hibiscus that had been there from when I planted them 20 years ago, is now just nothing. It's weeds. It kind of looks nice when it's springtime, but I have to do something else, and I really need the city to take a look at what each unit is costing each person, because my neighbors said, oh, I'm going to go from 4 weeks four times a day watering all my beautiful grass to two times a week watering my beautiful grass, and I'd already done that. So,
thank you, Steve.
For the extra time.
So I don't have any additional speaker request forms. I see people. Mr. Weissong?
I'm Don A. Weissong. I've been here quite a while. I've seen action from for the last 50, 60 years. But I have several things to say. And first of all, I said, Constitution or constructive criticism never hurts anybody. It's a damn truth that hurts. And people in the politics and people normal can't handle the truth today. I'm in my 80s. I just come from the ranch. I haven't seen a 60, 70, 80-year-old man that can do what I did, and yet I got run over by a damn pickup. And yet, over there on Brighton, 3 weeks ago, a mail truck waited 7 minutes to get out. Next door to me is Highway Patrol. I said, why in the hell don't you go get those people speeding down? He said, I'm here observing. I said, for what? He says, this is the most critical intersection in Central California. I said, why don't you go down there and tell them? He said, I laughed. I'm not going to say what he said. But over on Halcyon, I go there 7 days a week, south of Margaret Harlow. There's a crosswalk now. There's one over by Ford for all these kids to go over and get food and drinks. We can't get one there. So, you know, when I was in that one-room school, my government teacher weighed about 300 pounds, 6 foot five, and he made assembly in the state there. And he took me to Indianapolis to the state building, and I watched that in 1940, how people with money come in and persuade these politicians. Well, it's 300 times worse today than it was then. That's what really spoiled me on politics. But, you know, I'm going over to Roy Grandy, their next meeting, and I'm going to ask him for help. For I don't think it's proper for you people to be elected, and you're elected for the people to help them in their life and let them suffer trying to get across that street. You're not elected for that. And if you're going to let that happen, then none of you are qualified to sit there and take taxpayers' money. If you're not here for the health and welfare of the people, then you don't deserve to sit there. You want to say water. 1990, we had a drought. Only 2 years. We're in the fourth. It was over here in the other room, and we had a house full of developers and contractors and all that. So we went over to Trueville, and we had mandatory moratorium, stop building houses. And it happened in South County. That I just can't stomach this situation for people that are so educated. I went to a Roman school. All you have to do is stop the building those houses, and you'll have a lot of water. Fill up the swimming pool, fill up the spas, and you'll have a lot of water. The poor guy here, if he only knew what happened a few years ago, well, then he'd understand why his water bill. I've been to Visalia three times because there's can't sell cattle in Kempton. But over there, there's 20,000 acres on 41 to 99 that's not farmed. Where are you people going to get your damn groceries at? From Mexico, Argentina? There's no water over there. The canals are empty. But you live next to the ocean, so you don't know what's going on. You're you know, it's just sad. But the last thing is the water, the treatment plant over here. I mean, sit here and get six figures and do nothing, and he gets, I don't know what, coming from North L.A. You could have gone over there 2 years ago, and you could have started saving money by that treatment plant. I'm 80 years old, plus, and I went to a one-room school. Why in the hell am I standing here telling you people what to do?
John, I need you to wrap up. I've given you extra time.
Also, I got a thing here that tells how and why I was overcharging everybody else. You took money from the people here, and it says here where you went out and hired people to read the meter. That's a dead giveaway.
Thank you.
Thank you. You stole from people.
Thank you, John. Is there anyone else? Please come forward.
That's okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Paulette Messenheimer, and I want to thank you all for your work and for being here to hear everybody. I was having sort of a quiet time this morning, and I was thinking about what all my neighbors have been doing about cutting water, and there's a house next door to me that just got sold, and new people are moving in, and they're seeing, you know, all the drought-tolerant plants that my husband has put in, and then I thought, well, you know, what's going to happen? When is the convention center going to be built? And how is that water going to be provided for? Where are we going to get it? Where are they going to get it? How are we going to, what is the plan for this? Because I don't know, and I've tried to read something on it, and I can't find it all. But that's just something that's a concern for me, because I know we need the money for the city, because that's why we've approved it. And yet, we're not always going to be in a drought. Who knows when it'll change? But I just was wondering what the plan was for that. Thanks.
Great. And Paula, can you make sure you get a card from the city manager, too, so we can follow up with you on that information?
I'm Linda McClure. I own a property in Grover Beach. I live in Grover Beach, and I have a business in Grover Beach. The only thing that is a little bit concerning to me on the water situation, I wasn't going to speak. I was here for another item. When it was first brought up, I asked, what are you guys going to do? Are you just going to start fining people? Because being a property manager, I know that last year I might have had a house that had one or two people in it. Now that house has five people in it. And I believe, if I'm not incorrect, that I was told you would get a warning, a second warning, and then the fine would come on the third time. That didn't happen because I ended up paying a pretty good fine on the property where I have five units. And the change of how many actually were living in there was a lot different. And when we questioned it and I sent in the documentation to show, hey, it's different from last year, it was denied based on the contract. And I should have been told that I had to have everyone that was living in that unit on the contract. And what I have done is now I do that, but I'm also, I don't want to say lenient, but I also understand that in these times you may have a son, daughter with some kids that show up. They may be there for a month or so, and you're not going to run them off. I'm not going to run mine off. I don't think any of you are going to run yours off. So I would wish that you would go back to the original thought that you get a warning and it gives us a heads up. And then we can explain why the difference is. I wouldn't want you guys' job for nothing. I'm telling you that right now and stuff. But I want you to know that I understand the water situation. I went for the cash for grass on all five of my units across the street. And I'm going to have Drought Scapes come out. He's going to do the map, and he's going to do everything, and we're going to make it where we save money that way. But the people that were living in the house I'm in now, there was five of them, so I'm going to have it looking real good on me because there's only one of me. But the place that I moved out of, they moved in, and there was only me, and now there's five of them. So it's going to really make a big difference and stuff, and it would help a little bit if we could have a warning. You're going over. Hey, we had a breakage in the water. The minute we found it, you know, we went out and had it fixed, which has happened twice on properties. And I call down here now and say, hey, this would happen, and, you know, I want you to know it was a complete accident. Nobody meant to do it. So anyway, it might help a little bit if we looked back at what was said and people will be expecting or cutting back.
Thank you, Linda. Okay. Seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close public communications, and we're going to move on to our regular business. And this is item, we're going to move to consent. And let's see, consent is basically when we take several items, they're routine, they're listed and scheduled as a group. And so tonight on our consent agenda, we have four items. The first is the Treasury report for the period of April 14th through the 29th. The second is the Treasurer's Report, which is the Street Bonds Account Measure K-14 for the period of April 14th through April 29th, 2015. The third is minutes of the regular City Council meetings of April 6th and April 20th. And then the final one is guidelines and procedures for the appointment of a Citizens Committee. Do any members of the Council want to pull any item from consent? Okay. I see none, and I have no speaker request forms on this on consent agenda tonight. So with that, someone prepared to make a motion on the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. And, City Attorney, can I do this with a voice vote? Or I see the number six maybe. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, now we're going to move to regular business. This is item number seven on the agenda. And this is a discussion regarding city park use, special events, and outdoor assemblies. Is this going to be a tag team staff report?
Yes.
Okay. Your moral support. Ms. Pittpacker, are you giving the report? Or?
I'm going to start.
Okay, very good. You have the floor.
Mr. Mayor and City Council members, last year the police... There was on. Is that okay? Last year, the police department held a community meeting at the Ramona Garden Center, and during that meeting, community members were concerned and frustrated regarding how the park was being used. Staff later presented information to the Parks Recreation and Beautification Commission regarding complaints made by the community members, and the commission expressed support for an ordinance that regulated the permitting process with specific rules that would apply to all parks and park users so that everyone could enjoy the city parks. The City Council directed staff to research a possible city ordinance that would require a permitting process for specific uses at city parks. Last year in September, Grover Beach United hosted a car show in Grover Beach. During the planning and permitting process for this event, staff identified several issues in dealing with the special event ordinance and researched ways for improvement. Staff has been discussing amending existing ordinances, such as the Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 3, Chapter 10, which deals with parades and activities on public streets, in Article 3, Chapter 11, Special Events and Outdoor Assemblies. The purpose of reviewing these ordinances is to better govern the use of city parks and to improve the process for special events and outdoor assemblies. The goals would be to improve and streamline existing ordinances, help alleviate some of the concerns voiced by the community, and establish set guidelines for city park use, outdoor assemblies, and the rental of public facilities. The following changes have been considered for staff for review. 1. Eliminate Article 3, Chapter 10, and incorporate the parade activity details into Article 3, Chapter 11. Require a permitting process for groups larger than 15 persons, and limit applicants to not more than 12 events in a 12-month period of time. This, along with the 15-person requirement, would help prevent any one group from dominating the daily use of the city parks. 4, make adjustments for a time period when an application permit is to be filed. 5, set the cost for permitting process to use city parks to be determined by size and type of event. Set special event conditions that would be based on type and size of events, such as bathroom facilities needed, garbage removal, drinking water, insurance, and security needs. 7, cost of recovery for city personnel determined during the permit process. And 8, based on or subject to some potential size and cost limitations, allow the city manager the authority to approve or deny the use permit without having to go to city council. This decision would be subject to appeal to city council, and this would allow a much more efficient, streamlined process. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Kathy to discuss some of the impacts to the city parks.
Mayor and city council members, thank you. Some of the unintended impacts, if we did move forward with the lower attendance rate, would be that the park users with 15 or more people would be required to complete the special event permit process. And the number 15 came up with that based on the historical use of our parks and based on the commission's review. And that was a number that it can still be a moving number, obviously, but that was a realistic number based on our current impacts, based on if we have large group picnic areas or adult sports groups that are currently using our parks on a drop-in basis that would impact our existing renters if they did drop in. This would also impact our youth athletic leagues, which this could be mitigated by allowing a seasonal permit for the youth sport activities to continue. The commission was presented this information, and as Commander Miller just mentioned, that they did endorse the items that were just presented. And at this time, we'd like to allow the council to ask questions of staff, and I'd like to be able to clarify anything else in the parks if you have any questions.
Okay, very good. Questions of staff. Council Member Shaw.
Okay, I have a few questions. I'm glad you clarified, you know, the number 15. I guess One thing I wanted to ask, because as I was reading through this, the ordinance that you, the current ordinance, when you get back to the last part that I have here, section 2510, item D2, it seems like you already need a permit for groups of people exceeding 50 in number. And I guess I wanted to ask if that's been used, if how that has worked out, what kind of impacts that, or if that is being used.
We have not used that number, and we have not used that permit process. When we rent park barbecue areas, we have areas that are 2 areas of 60 large group rentals, and then we have one area of 100 group rentals. So this would be in addition, this 50 would have been in addition to those barbecue rentals, but we have never used that permit process. This would probably be unrealistic to allow a group of 50 to have a permit in addition to a group barbecue rental, because that would impact a park. So for example, if we had 260 groups, 160 on the upper area, 160 on the lower area, and then if a group of 50 came in and said we want to get a permit, we would have to deny that permit based on the fact that it would be too much impact on the park, too much parking, trash, maintenance facility.
So this is something separate, not, I don't know, the way I'm reading it, it kind of reflects what we're already talking about, but that's why I know I'm misreading it.
Right, no. We have not used this 50. This would be a cleanup that we would need to change to a 15.
Okay, so yes. That would have to change. And then I guess I'm trying to understand in my mind how this will work in day-to-day. So let's say that, for example, I had my kid's birthday party in the park. So I rented one of the barbecues. But let's say, but I just found out today, actually, that if I didn't rent that barbecue and nobody else was using it, no one would have thrown me out, even no matter what my number was.
Correct.
But now, so I could have got that money back. But anyway, actually, it was good to know, though. I wanted to, so I would know I would have the
guarantee.
Space. That's why you do it. But so now, if we do this, anytime you're going to meet in a park with over 15 people, you need to make sure you have the permit. Is that?
Yes.
No matter where, if it's a
correct.
Okay, let's say you're just renting the barbecue station. Would the procedure be the same, or would you also then have to get a permit for your people?
No.
Okay, be the same.
No. You'd still have the rental, but you still have to apply for the rental to guarantee that space. If you wanted to have your birthday party somewhere else on a grassy area on the other side of the park for 15 or more, you could apply for a permit.
Okay. And then one thing in here that struck me, because, for example, we planned our birthday party like 6 days in advance. I noticed you have to get the permit 30 days in advance. You know, how flexible can we be with that? Or because a small birthday party or a family barbecue, you might not plan 30 days in advance.
We can address that and make it more flexible, yeah.
Okay.
Right now, the barbecue rentals are first come, first serve, and those people, if it's not reserved the day before, they can go online and reserve it. But
okay, yeah, because I don't want people to lose the flexibility that, like you're saying, they can go online, and if something's open, they can rent it. I think that's what makes the online system so great.
Well, the other difference between the permits and the rentals is that if the type of event that the permit is issued for could trigger the other conditions for a special event. So we already know in a barbecue area what they're going to be doing. They'll be barbecuing, picnicking. That's all that facility will accommodate. But if you would like to reserve a grassy area in another park and you have a type of event that you want that specific, then there are other conditions we would go through to make sure that those are met so that they're not just setting up a bounce house without a permit and insurance, those types of things. So we already have those in order with our barbecue areas.
Oh, I see. So, okay. I understand. Okay. And then, let's see. I know it doesn't say here we're talking about the amount that it's going to cost. We're not. But could you give a ballpark of what maybe a permit for 15 people would cost and how it might go up with number of people?
I think that that's still to be determined, and staff could do some research if we're directed to see how other cities are doing their permits. But I'm sure there would be an administrative fee to process, and then based on the amount and how much staff time it would take to process the permit and get all the authorizations, there would be a range.
Okay, and then going along with that comment, my other question was how much you guys looked at what our neighbors are doing with their event permits, and how does this compare?
Our city parks and our local agencies are not doing special event permits in parks right now. It's just what we currently have here in Grover Beach as well, just the barbecue rentals. But the large, you know, the special event permits are done completely separately for, like, a large special event. And other, it depends on their park sizes as well.
Okay.
So our parks cannot accommodate the large events that other city special event permits allow.
And just as I'm looking at the current special event ordinance, for example, section 3976 that talks about all the different things you need for a special event, like garbage and water. I mean, those will be triggered only at certain number of numbers of people, I assume.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, I think that's all I had for questions.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
Yes. In September 14, this council directed staff to come back with a draft ordinance. And we do not have a draft ordinance to look at and discuss tonight. And I'm wondering why this time frame is stretching out, because if it follows the usual timeline procedures, we will not have an ordinance in place before July or August. And that's kind of unacceptable in my thinking.
Mr. Mayor?
Is there any way
hold
that
on
we
a second.
Can you're streamline this?
Okay. That's the end of your question?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, City Manager.
Mr. Mayor, rather than developing an ordinance that just based on staff's opinion as to what that ordinance should be, the reason that we took this approach was to bring a series of concepts to the council for consideration because we wanted to make sure that we got it right in terms of the actual drafting. It adds an additional step, but that's one of the reasons that we also took the concepts to the Parks and Recreation Commission first. It took a little bit longer. We put a lot of staff thought into what those concepts should be. And now you're right, depending on the direction we get, it could take another 60 days to actually complete the process.
Any more questions?
No.
You sure? Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Thank you. And most of my questions were answered by my colleagues. So the one I was going to go in a slightly different direction with the remainder of my questions, and it has to do with larger events. With regards to giving events enough time to plan forward potentially have an annual event with regards to some pre-planning, and whether it's Stone Soup, whether it's the car show, whether it's other events that are going to come into our city. So I don't see in here the thought process of how this changes or how this improves what they're attempting to accomplish. The going from 30 days to 60 days, what was the thought process behind only increasing it by 30 days?
Go ahead, Jim. For the turnaround.
So, Mayor Pro Tem Lee, some of the thought that goes along with the streamlining process of this was specifically to address what your concerns were. In the past, and we haven't had a lot of experience with our special event ordinance, and thus, so to address some of the concerns of the streamlining, it's on.
I'm having mic problems.
All right.
I think I've done this before. Previously, the way it was done is a person had to submit an application for a special event. We had to look at it, review it, go through all the review process for the city, then bring it to city council for review and approval. And that would take, you know, a month, couple weeks to a month to even longer to get that approval process done before they could even start planning for their event. This, actually, one of the things that we'd like to address would be that approval process, that it would be done at the city manager or staffing level rather than having to come back to city council unless it was a large enough event. And this then could bring that back as necessary to the council, but it could be approved at the city manager level so that a person could start planning their process immediately once the approval has gone through city staff. We would then review that conditions, and then they can apply to those conditions. So if a person, whether it was a yearly event or they decided to have one right away, they still could do that, and we can get it done much quicker and approved much quicker than having to come to council for an approval of, say, like last year with a car event. That could have been done much quicker than going through the process that we did last time. So that's hopefully addresses that question.
It does, but I didn't see that in here. Item number four is specifically where I'm going, and so perhaps the thought was to include it in the final ordinance.
So the timing of that can be the current language is 60 days. So if a person is 55 days away from the event they want to plan, we can't do the process. There's no way to get it to council to get it approved. So they're out of luck. If it's over 60 days, then we can get something to the council. The reason we want to shorten that, and it can be 30 days, it can be 10 days, it can be whatever eventually it ends up being, but it's to address those birthday parties or those family events or whatever event is. If somebody decides in 6 days they want to have a birthday party, they don't have to, they're not restricted by the 60-day time period. It could be 30 days or 10 days or whatever we end up setting. So it gives staff enough time to review the application and see if there's any conditions other than thank you for turning in your application here, go have fun. We actually, you know, if there's going to be staff time, if there's going to be needs that need to be met. So there needs to be enough time there for staff to review that application. So, you know, at this point, we don't have a time period. It could be 30 days. It could be 10 days, you know, whatever council directs on that.
Let me ask you, Mayor, if I may add, I think there's a little bit of confusion.
Okay.
Our current code provides for a 60-day application for parades and a 30-day application for special events. There's a schism, for lack of a better word, in the timing. So that may be what's throwing your question up. So I think it's attempt is to standardize it.
Okay. So let me ask a hypothetical and see if it clarifies my thought process. Is, let's say I want to have my family gathering 4th of July next year. So when can I apply for that permit?
Today.
Okay. So then, so when am I going to get anticipated conditions of approval on that event?
Could be today, could be a week from today, could be a month, depending on the size and type of event. So staff would have to take that application, review it. If it's just your birthday party on 4th of July and there's nothing else there and there's no unusual conditions, it could be approved in the same day, I imagine, like we do for most of our other applications that come through.
When can I sell tickets to my family members so that I'm not out of pocket?
Today, once it's approved.
So is that consistent with our current ordinance?
Well, our current ordinance says that you can't sell tickets until it's approved by the council.
So this would change that?
The approval process is completed, so okay. This would change that process.
Okay, because I didn't see that in here. Or did I miss that?
Well, I think the language in the current ordinance specifies, you know, this. We didn't address that. We highlighted some of the major changes. Some of the nitty-gritty of the ordinance that we've looked at addresses that. And one of those, the way it addresses that is once an application, once the event is approved for having the application, then you can do whatever you need to do to promote, do whatever you do with your event. So that's still in the ordinance, and it will probably stay in the new ordinance. It's a timing of the approval process that will be that we're looking at adjusting.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I think it does. And then going last question, going down to the bullet number 8, where it moves the approval process from the council down to the city manager. Was there a discussion about further pushing that down to the community development director?
Absolutely, and it actually is city manager or designee. So it would be okay. Whoever the city manager may choose. If it's a park-specific issue, it could be the Parks and Recreation director, program director, whoever the city manager designates in the approval process. So absolutely.
And was there thought on whether that appeal, and keeping at the city manager, I can see where it would get appealed to the council. If it went to the community development director or designee, whether that's the Parks and Rec director or not, would it be appropriate to have an appeal to either the Planning Commission or Parks and Rec first? Obviously, realizing this is extending time frames all over the place if people are concerned with events. I'm just trying to figure out, is this the most expeditious way to get someone an answer? And maybe it is.
In my opinion, it could be appealed to the Parks Rec Commission if that's the direction council wants to give them the authority to approve special event permits. That's not how it's been in the past, so we didn't look at that direction. It was more of, if it can't be handled at the city administration, like most of our other stuff, it would be appealed to the city council.
Okay. Those are all really good questions, so I have several. So I know you probably touched on this a little bit, so just for my edification for the community that's in the audience and on TV, what is a special event? Sure. We got all of these staff around the table, so if someone answer, take a shot.
A special event is anything that happens currently in the way the ordinance is. Anything that happens over 500 people attending becomes a special event that requires a permit approval by council.
Okay. So now, would this ordinance modify that number? Because I keep seeing 15.
So the goal that we're searching for is in order to address concerns that have come forward regarding use of our parks, we looked at modifying that number to a much less number, and currently we're looking at 15. It can be changed by council, obviously. And that would be any event that's occurring in public places or public assembly, public places that the city owns. So basically parks, streets, you know, whatever. So it would encompass parades and things like that.
Okay.
And if I may add, Mayor and members, I think that the direction that the staff has took on this, and it's before you to do exactly what you're doing and discuss it and give us either approval to move forward or any alterations. And that is the current ordinance for special events and parades is fairly strict, and it puts a lot of requirements on the applicants. Under the system that we're trying to put into place, the number of people that constitute a special event would decrease to 15 or more, but the requirements and what is needed and how it's evaluated become very flexible. In other words, if somebody comes in and wants to have a family barbecue for your birthday, I suggest you should have started selling tickets sooner, but that's a separate issue. But for 15 people, then it is probably a 1 or 2 day approval process, and there are not a lot of requirements and things that will be dictated by the ordinance. On the other hand, if there is an event that has high impact on our resources and on our facilities in the city, then there will be far more requirements, probably a little lengthier review period, but still faster, at least that's the goal, than what's currently been put into place.
Okay, because I just wanted to be clear that we're now saying a party of 16 people is the same as a wedding party of 250 and a streetcar show, which might have 400 people. So I just want to be clear. So let me go specifically to the staff report. There's a reference on page one where you're talking about an ongoing, because you're talking about fiscal impacts and loss of income from a group that was using Ramona and they no longer use it. So I wanted to know what organization is that are you referring to in the staff report?
We had an ongoing church group at the Ramona Center, and they canceled their ongoing reservation, weekly reservation, due to being uncomfortable at the facility and the park surroundings.
So why were they uncomfortable?
There was vagrant behavior happening around them.
Okay. Just want to be clear. So if we're talking about writing an ordinance that's going to have universal effect on our parks, I want us to be clear what we're talking about, because I don't want us to start getting into legal issues. And I have a lot more comments later.
Mayor?
Yes.
If I could also say that we have had a couple potential renters come to the facility and for 1 day special event and have been disappointed in the surroundings as well of the vagrant behavior and did not continue their reservations.
Okay, very good. So then on page two you talk about issues, and I'm assuming the vagrancy issue is something that you are all referring to, correct, in a staff report?
Yes.
Okay. Because I do want to ask the question. We're talking about modifying the special events permit in the process. So have we experienced any problems with large events, such as parking around the park and in residential neighborhoods? So have we had that experience?
With parking, no.
Have we had an experience with noise during these large events, which will soon be small persons at an event?
I would say yes and no. We've had complaints of individual people making lots of noise.
Okay. Is there a specific time in which we're hearing complaints? Is it during the middle of the day? Is it in
yes,
the evening?
We've had complaints in the middle of the day. With.
So what's the trend? When are the largest calls in the?
I'll turn that over to the police department on the calls.
Okay.
However, in terms of parks and recreation facilities and rentals, definitely we get meetings, people calling when they're in their meetings in the facility saying there's outside vagrant behavior, including noises happening.
Okay.
So, if you want specific on calls, I'll turn that to BD.
Okay.
We're talking about loud noise or disturbance calls. I don't have specific numbers available, but a majority of them are in the afternoon when the people, you know, when there's a congregation at the park.
Okay. So then I have a question regarding, and Jeff, you kind of went down the path of a planned family gathering and the process. It's no secret I have a very large family. I have 10 brothers and sisters. So, and obviously my extended family here. So we're now talking about an ordinance that goes beyond use of the actual building or the barbecue. So if my family or friends showed up unannounced, it's a Sunday, are we not able to use the park? Do we have to wait to get a permit?
Technically, yes, you should have gotten a permit. However, this is going to be complaint driven. So if you show up and have your party, there's nothing the city can do about it unless there's complaints.
Okay. All right. Those are all of my questions for now.
Actually, can I ask one follow-up question?
Sure.
to your question?
Uh-huh.
And so if my family came in 3 days before John's. He has a much larger
family. But you got a small family.
Exactly. And my party of 16 came through, and I did get a permit. Then it sounds like there would still be a sharing of the park potential. I mean, using Ramona as the example, there's the lower park and the upper park. So how about Cleaver Park? Does this apply to that as well?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it basically, if I get there first with a permit, then obviously that's first come, first serve.
Yes.
Okay. And Mayor, to be clear, it is the intent of the ordinance and intent of putting into place that it be enforced. If groups are using the park without a permit when that permit is necessary, the city and staff have every right to either ask them to get a permit immediately or disband.
Yeah, it's an ordinance. It's municipal law. So, okay. And a police staff, this is not an attack on what you've done. It's really trying to ascertain if there are compelling reasons to be doing this. And, you know, I'll have a lot more comments later. And I appreciate all the research you've all done. And this is obviously why we're having the meeting, so that we can ask you these tough questions, because folks at home and folks in this audience expect us that of us. So what I want to do is, I know there are people who are interested in this item, but there are no additional council questions. I want to open this up to the public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to come forward and address the item before the council?
Linda McClure, resident of Grover Beach, president of Grover Beach United, and the car show. I would like to encourage a couple of things when this is being done. One, we need to make it easier with as little cost as possible up front for these special events. This can help the businesses as well as our city. Right now, we don't have any special events other than Stone Soup and now the car show. I don't think there's anything else that's going on. And I've been told time and time again, it's too expensive. We found that out last year. We anticipated more than showed up. We say we broke even, but we still owed $1,500 when it was over. But that was really good for 6 weeks of planning. The problem with this is that we had started several months prior. I remember somebody on the board said, well, you know, if you're coming up here and just asking, you know, 2 months before this kind of an event. No, we started at least 7 or 8 months prior. It didn't get approved until almost 6 weeks prior to the event. And the way the prior ordinance read, we couldn't ask for sponsors. They could give to Grover Beach United, but they couldn't give to the car show. We couldn't ask for anyone to be a vendor. We couldn't ask for any entries. So we had our hands tied, and so we did a heck of a job, if I may say so myself, on obtaining everybody that we did, and we had a lot of vendors, and we had a great deal of fun, and a lot of the businesses gave plaques for trophies, etc. So we're encouraging you to listen about the cost when you first go in. I went in and paid $250 just to get the permit process started. Pismo Beach takes $60. Okay, that's a huge difference. I don't know why the difference, but it's huge. I would like that if they could put in the document that the city, for an event of 500 or 1,000 or 2,000, that it comes to them 9 months to a year ahead of time, because that's what I was basically told. I should have started for this year immediately after last year. And though it was hard last year, I didn't realize I needed to go that fast, because I was waiting for this ordinance to be changed so that when I go down that list, I see what I have to have, and the errors in that, which we all knew were errors, aren't outstanding, like 33.5 gallons of water per volunteer. Of course, it's 3.5, but, you know, and then not being able to find the sponsors. We lost a huge sponsor that could have gotten Grover Beach United $20,000 out of their sponsors, and he just said he won't come back because it's too difficult. So hopefully we can make it easier. Also, if we could make it to where if there is a large charge, the city was very generous last year because it was our first year. They did allow us to make payments, and we had to have it there. The last payment had to be there 30 days prior to the event, and if this event didn't take place because we didn't pay, we took the brunt of it. It wasn't the city's fault. It was our fault, and we're very grateful for that, and I ask that that stay on the books, that, you know, you'll work with them. We need to get more events in this town. I would ask that a nonprofit only have to have 2 years of nonprofit so long as it's local history, businesses, or citizens that have gotten the nonprofit. I've been here for 52 years. I cannot go in for the fireworks stand until our Grover Beach United has been a three-year item, which is very sad for us because we could have really done a lot with the money we would have made on that. And remember, all of our money that we're getting is going back to the businesses of our town. I would like to know who's going to be out there counting those 15 people, because there may be someone that says, I'm going to have 14 people, and such as the mayor, he's got a large family. You got people that show up at birthday parties that you don't even know they're bringing two more people and stuff. So might be a little hard to figure it out. But if you could take a look at those items and just make it a little easier, I think you'll find a lot of events coming to Grover, because Grover is now back on the map, and people are loving Grover. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Is there anyone else? Please come forward.
This is just real quick. I'm wondering about these after-school and summer camp groups that regularly use some of the parks. Do they know about these ordinances? Do they have to have permits? And, you know, are the kids secure? That's my basic concern.
Very good.
Okay.
And let the record show that was Paulette Messenheimer. Okay. I think Sharon has a question. Someone get her a mic.
Well, I'll shout.
Are you able to pick her up, AGP video?
Well, Paulette and I both live, in fact, she's catty corner across the street from me in Golden West. And every year, 4th of July, we celebrate the 4th of July as a community in our park. What we think of as our park, but it is a city park. Mm-hmm. Now, in reading all of this, I mean, we have anywhere from 30 to 50 people show up. We never know how many are going to come. In reading this, I'm thinking we're going to be a special event. Is that right?
Okay.
We're just using the park. We bring our own table.
Right. There you go. So hold on. Once you finish your comments, Sharon, I'm taking down all your questions, and we will get your answers. Okay.
Anyway, you hear from Paulette as well. So that's one of my concerns on a very personal level that affects the community that I live in. That has 116 in it. Okay. And I also had some other questions. I guess I'm a little confused. I am concerned about the number of 15. I think that's far too few. I think you need to boost that up. There's a big gap between that and 500. That needs to be addressed. I think I read somewhere at home online that there would be only a few 15 or more events per year. Did I read that correctly? Is that for?
So I think she'd be referring to, there's a reference to the number of events, 12, right?
Well,
12 per year.
That was the second one. Oh. I thought that I remembered permitting only a few, 15 or more events a year.
Yeah, one group, 12
for,
times
for
per
one
year.
Group. Okay.
Oh, okay. Let's see what else I got here. Oh, as far as the parade goes, would a parade include a political or protest march on the sidewalk?
Okay. Hold on. Let her, why don't you finish, ask all your questions, Sharon, that way we can do it all at once, okay?
And I'm assuming that political rallies are an allowable use as long as they don't exceed 500.
Okay. Any more? Very good. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address that before the council? Okay. Seeing the one come forward, so we had some very good questions from the community, and I know Linda didn't ask questions. She made some very good suggestions. I think the council has taken note of those. I believe Paulette asked a question about how would the schools be treated under this? Would they have to get a permit? Will they be made aware of this requirement? Are they aware of the existing requirement if there is a change?
I think that would be on a case-by-case basis. I mean, if it's a school-sponsored activity, no. And even after-school activities, they would be.
So are you recommending an exemption for schools?
No. And that's council's prerogative, and we're treating the youth nonprofit league, sports leagues, as okay. Seasonal permit.
I think consideration needs to be given to the reasons for the ordinance being into place, and those are universal across the board. The activity itself should not dictate the impacts that activity will have. So the ordinance is designed to deal with the potential impacts. And those impacts, whether it's a group of school kids or it's a group of somebody's family, are the same.
Yeah.
So there needs to be equal application of that law.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I believe Ms. Brown actually asked, as she always does, very poignant questions. So she had asked, do protests on sidewalks, would that qualify as a special event? And political rallies.
I'll defer the city attorney to that one.
The ordinance is not designed to regulate. The ordinance is not designed to regulate somebody's activity in a public right-of-way in a sidewalk. But if a event takes place, which even if it is a political event or a rally, in city parks and city-owned areas, then it is subject to a permit.
Okay. So, a lot of great conversation, excellent questions. Back to the council. So someone earlier said they wouldn't want our job, so let's earn our money. So, who wants to start off the discussion on this item? So staff has brought back, some language and some, they had gone to the Recreation and Beautification Commission. I was looking at the acronym and the letters got flipped on me. And then it looks like you're looking for some suggestion on directing them regarding a draft ordinance for special events, parades, outdoor assemblies. So who wants to start off with this discussion? Mayor Pro Tem.
Sure. I'll throw it out here. I'm going to start with a comment of I echo Councilmember Nichols' concerns about the length of time it's taken to get here. That notwithstanding, it's here before us this evening to achieve some direction. Concerns that I have is I see a whole series of unintended consequences from going to 500 to 15. That's a huge leap in my mind. I don't know if there's a in-between number with regards to that. The other potential concern I have is the restricting the use of one applicant to effectively one event per month. Perhaps there's an opportunity or a method to, let's say someone's using the Mentone Basin, which we've allowed them to use as soccer fields. Between practices and games, I'm sure they probably at times do more than 15 events a month from that perspective. And while they are not rising to the level of concerns or noise or so forth as some of the other events, I just see that again as an unintended consequence. So I'm not sure from direction from that standpoint, but I think there's a larger number, both in number of events on an annual basis and a number of events on or number of people that would be more supportable to the community, and or legal challenges. And I don't know if the city attorney would speak to that at some point with regards to or if we would need to wait until some language is in front of us in order to determine the defensibility of any pending ordinance. In reading through this, I realize that the police department and Parks and Rec have a balancing act to do here, notwithstanding the unspoken concern of vagrancies, or the spoken concern of vagrancies with regards to how it addresses special events. But I think some of the other ordinances and procedures that the city has put into place are starting to address some of those concerns. And I don't know, I mean, it's basically referenced in the staff report that service calls are down and so forth. And I don't know if it's a matter of time before our use of the park goes back to a typical level, or the comfort level of our renters or users of the park is going to increase. We may never know how quickly or how long that's going to take. And I think I made my comments known earlier with regards to the length of time, and I think the chief kind of captured those with regards to the larger events of how to proceed with regards to that. So realizing that our desire or our intent is to provide direction to staff, that's my comments and my feedback. But I guess I'd like to hear from staff at some point or other colleagues how we anticipate staff is going to accomplish this.
Yeah.
So with this framework.
Wow. Councilmember Shaw.
Okay. I was hoping I would clear it up, but I'm going to make it probably more confusing. I appreciate, this is the way you guys, I mean, you have to start somewhere and take a first stab at it, or we'll never get anywhere. But this approach kind of left me a little bit more confused, because these are a lot of suggestions, but then I'm not quite sure. I mean, of course, with the 15 people and certain things are being directly addressed, but in my mind, we have two things we're trying to regulate here. We want more special events like Miss McClure's, and we also want to, I mean, we say it flat out in the staff report, we need to regulate what's going on in Ramona Park, specifically with the People's Kitchen. So it seems like by trying to put these two interests together, we're almost getting it more confused and taking up more time. For example, all of the specific things that Ms. McClure addressed in what she was talking about, none of them are even begun to be addressed yet, so I don't know how we're streamlining anything. It seems like we're kind of taking a stab at our People's Kitchen issue, but I just think we have a ton more work to do, and I'm not even sure where to go until I have something in front of me that I can jump off from. That being said, these would be my suggestions. So I think I've heard, I haven't read the whole thing because PISMO's special event ordinance is about half an inch thick from what I understand, but they have a great special event ordinance from what I've heard. So maybe we could use them and use suggestions from Ms. McClure, even she could meet and give suggestions, because I think we need to nail that down or we're going to miss her car show again. We're going to mess that up, and I would feel really bad about that. So that's one area. As far as regulating down to 15 people, man, I think that's low, and I understand we're trying to regulate Ramona Park. And one thing Councilmember Lee said is some of the things in Ramona Park are already on the mend, but we have to keep in mind that's because we've authorized additional $15,000 of our police pushing in the park, and we can't just continue to do that. And we have some momentum going, and we need to keep that momentum going and get the park back to the use it was intended for. So I do appreciate the effort in this situation. I'm not sure what exactly the solution is, and like I said, I don't have enough concrete in front of me to even decide right now. Maybe I'm just thick-headed today, but I don't see how Section 2510 doesn't cover the People's Kitchen Ramona Park situation, 2510D, because I go to the feedings in the park. I've been there. It's more often than not over 50 people, and more often than not, a table is erected. So I'm not sure why we couldn't just use the ordinance we already have. I'm missing something. Perhaps the city attorney could tell me what I'm missing.
That's a good question. City attorney.
Thank you. I think one of the things that isn't contained in this ordinance, nor anywhere else, that I could see in the code is, okay, so what kind of a permit? And what does it cost? And who pays for it? And what are the parameters of issuing it? What are the criteria? That's why I think in the past this section really has not been put into any serious use that I've seen in 13 years. So that probably is one of the limitations. There's no question that there are sections in the code which were written a long, long time ago that as we go through and identify in the processes as we're engaged in right now, need rewriting, need to be changed and omitted. Again, I think one of the reasons I think that staff decided to first come in and discuss this rather than bring you a document that's a draft ordinance is exactly what's going on right now, because we don't know, A, if council as a whole is interested in moving in that direction, period. B, whether which of the many forks in the road you direct us to take on these issues. The overall goal of this, and it is a combination of two things coming together. One is the special event parade ordinance, trying to streamline some of the issues that that were faced within the event that the car show was involved in, and at the same time put something into place that allows us to control the use of our parks when it adversely affects other people's ability to use it or affects our facilities. The idea is that the current ordinance is very strict for the large events. It has large financial requirements, and very frankly, that was one of the main reasons for delays, was that it does require payments of money before things move forward. I think what we're looking to see if the council is interested in doing is basically having a more of a moving picture kind of an ordinance. In other words, small event, the requirements are minimal, the fees are minimal, very quick processing. Larger event, it's going to require a greater amount of facilities, insurance, but all those decisions can be made in a streamlined process. We're not bound by a rigid structure that is currently in place. That being said, it will be outlined in the ordinance so people who are applying know what to expect. In other words, here's a list of things that may be required depending on how the city manager or the designee view the effect of the event on the public facilities and on the uses for the given area. So maybe that'll help you a little bit with the confusion.
Okay.
It's an idea of basically the trying to thin it out and speed it up when possible, but give yourself the flexibility of being able to put on requirements on 500 people, 2,000 people. Large event, you still need to be able to insist on security, on bathrooms, on amount of water, and all of the other things that are needed. But we don't have that flexibility right now. You know, as accurately identified, it's either 500 or more or nothing. That's what we're trying to address, along with all the direction that we've received from the council after many conversations that were here before you about putting something into place that deals with the issues at Ramona Park.
Okay. Well, then that does help me that, okay, we have something here that we could possibly use, but it's not fleshed out, and it's so how can you guys enforce it and use it? That helps. I know you guys need direction, and I think I'm making it worse. So I want to give some clear direction as to what I would like to see is I would like to see an actual ordinance because I just can't. The suggestions are great, but I need to see what we would do. And I would almost say, I know we're trying to streamline it, but I would almost say let's really almost separate out the special type events and get that cleared and ready to go and get it rolling. And as far as trying to regulate Ramona Park and regulate, you know, what we've got going on there, maybe we could kind of just flesh out this 2510 and not take drastic steps and go down to 15 people. And I just want to be clear, whatever my feelings are personally, whatever anyone's feelings are personally, we represent the people, and I can't tell you how many citizens have begged me to do something about what's going on in Ramona Park, and I appreciate you guys doing it, and that's why I am trying to do it, not because of any bias against anyone or anything. So I appreciate it, and I guess that's my direction.
So we'll see what where the council goes, but I've got those noted, okay? We'll have that conversation. Barbara?
I'm hoping that maybe staff can use the commission more for helping to dovetail these two sections of the code to cut down as much delay time as we can. The 50, I think what is disturbing me the most about this is we're almost looking to over-regulate, going from very little regulation to over-regulating. So that if a karate studio wants to do their test out in Ramona Park, the running and the stamina things and that sort of stuff, and there's more than 15 students, they have to get a permit in advance because there will also be people. So we're discouraging the use. There's no use at the public schools after school hours. The schools are all fenced in and locked up. So the only place that families have to recreate is the city parks. And they're not going to get planned in advance. Somebody decides they have a block party. It's going to be spur of the moment. Let's all go down to the park and bring our boom box and dance or whatever. We're discouraging that kind of use of the park instead of and over-regulating it, it seems to me.
Those are all very insightful comments, so let me just start by saying thanks for all the work you've done. I mean, clearly, a previous council, I want to make sure that that's clear. There are three new members on this council from the time that this first direction was given, so that's another reason why this should be coming to us. But I want to say thank you for all the work you've done. Now, the good thing, I think first part is streamlining the special events permit process. Anything we can do to streamline that from a timing standpoint, and whether it's a certain number of people, I know we talk about over 500, but nothing under 500. As long as we're talking about a true special event, I think that's a good thing. Trying to figure out how do we facilitate permits to get those events in our community. That's a good thing. Now the bad thing, in my mind, I'm having such a huge issue or a dilemma, and I got a struggle going on up here because I understand folks were frustrated with the vagrancy at the park and people's kitchen at the park. And Miriam, you were the first one who said people's kitchen tonight. I was going to try and hold out and not be the first one to say that. But I was asking very specific questions of staff earlier because I want to make sure, are we doing this for the right reasons or are we doing this for a specific use? And I don't think the approach of over-regulating the park, using a sledgehammer to deal with the situation that has far-reaching implications. And I understand it was staff way of trying to be nuanced in how we address that issue, and I can respect that. But I want to make sure that if that is truly still an issue, we deal with that issue straight on. So part one is definitely direction. I think there's a consensus up here is to find a way to streamline the special events permitting process, and that's timeline, and I don't know if that's the number of people, but it's not 15. I can tell you that much. And my wise answer would have been, yeah, let's just say 13,000 because there's 13,000 people who live in this city. I have a real problem trying to regulate beyond the facilities. That means that we can't have people who are spontaneous, they pay taxes to use these parks. I think we need to really identify what is it we're trying to get at, because if we're going to do that, let's be specific and let's tie it to something specific. So here's a question. How many parking spaces are at Ramona? How many parking spaces are at South 16th and at Grover Heights? What's the capacity of each park? Do we know?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay, so I think we need to have that answer. I think if we're really going to go down the road of trying to regulate uses in our parks, we tie it to the resources. So if there are more folks than we have parking spaces and it starts to bleed into our neighborhoods, that's a compelling reason, right? I think that puts us on some solid footing and some foundation if we're going to go down that road. So I want to make sure that if we go to a subsequent meeting, we have answers to those things. I think, Marion, you bring up a really good point. I think that where we're all probably starting to focus in on is the Section 2510, and if there's a way to massage that to address the vagrancy or the people's kitchen situation, then let's take a closer look at that, because if we're going to continue down this road, I honestly, and I'm going to say this, and I know there won't be some people out there who won't appreciate this, but I can't not support an ordinance that places a limit on the amount of people who can use public parks. They're their parks. They pay for these parks, and I honestly cannot support that. Now, if we want to talk about how we can address the vagrancy in people's kitchen issue, then let's have that frank conversation, because I have a question. I have another question. Since the cameras were installed and since we've had a greater police presence, what has been the trend? Have we gotten less calls? What has been the nature of the calls? So, I kind of feel like that's been a positive result, and maybe we should let the community hear that.
So as far as the calls for service and the security checks at Ramona Gardens since the cameras have been installed, there's been well over a 50% decrease in the calls for service and security checks, and 100% decrease in arrests since those cameras have been installed. Those numbers are about a couple weeks old.
Okay.
And those are the numbers just for the Ramona Garden Center.
Okay. So then let's, as a council, let's see if we can't get some consensus and give staff some direction. So first part, let's do this in three parts. First part, streamlining the special events permit process. Do we have consensus on that?
Yes.
Do we
yes.
have a suggestion on how that might be done? I think there was a discussion about taking it from 60 to 30 days. Did I understand that correctly?
Well, the parade permit is 60 days and special event is 30 days.
And are you talking about aligning the two? Or
yes.
So making them both 30 yes. or 60 days?
60. I think we talked about 60.
Okay, come back with two options. I think let's break this in sections and let's deal with that, right? Mayor Pro Tem.
I was going to say, I agree, let's break it into sections, but I think I'm still confused in my thought process as to what is being done at the 60 days. Is that...
Okay.
But the latest time before the event is either 30 or 60 days.
So if we can clarify that.
Chief?
And Mayor, if I want to ask some clarification on that as well, is the current process for special events is to come to city council for approval. Is council okay with that being city manager or designee as part of the process for some of the special events? That way it can handle it at the staff level.
So are you saying city manager or city manager designee?
It's the same thing. So the city manager could do it, or the city manager as designee could do it.
So my feeling, and I don't know if everyone, is the fact that any decision that the city manager or his designee makes is appealable to the city council, so I'm okay with streamlining the process that way. Mm-hmm. Okay. Were there any other items under the streamlining special events that you needed direction on?
I don't think so, but I did want to mention that all of Ms. McClure's issues that she brought up have been addressed in our staff discussions in the streamlining process for the event. They just weren't highlighted. Some of that stuff can be managed very easily in the ordinance process. So we have considered all of everything that she's brought this time and the previous time when she approached council.
Okay, very good.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yes.
So when we actually see the ordinance, all these changes will be reflected.
That's correct. It'll be in a legislative form and then a draft form of it.
Okay.
And so for those who don't know what legislative form is that they show what the existing ordinance is, they strike out what they're proposing to delete, and they may underline or bold what they're proposing to be inserted. So, and I like that format.
Yeah.
So the second part of is talking about the regulation of city parks and facilities, and that's why I was asking a question about number of parking spaces and the capacities, because I don't see a compelling reason to go forward on this unless we're going to tie it to the true resources, meaning that if someone's got an event that's going to tax the park, that's going to force cars into neighborhoods, that's going to have those kind of impacts on communities, then we need to regulate it. If you're just saying that an organization is feeding someone at the park and folks don't like the way they look, or they're hanging out and there's loitering issues, then we still need to address that specific activity. But this is going to be far-reaching on all city parks. So I think if we're going to talk about regulation, my feeling is we need to tie it to the resources, the parking, the capacity of the park itself, and anything else that can be legally defensible rather than some arbitrary number.
And again, the number is one of the reasons why we're here, and that's a discussion that obviously is open to the council. Understanding your point, Mayor, with regard to tying it to facilities, even if that attempt is somehow made, I just want to be clear that this was our best effort.
No, I understand.
At controlling the specific activity lawfully.
I understand.
Okay, so any additional narrowing of it, we'll have to discuss and see how we can present that.
Yeah. I think, and that's obviously you're going to give us advice so that we don't get into legal hot water or make this community susceptible to legal challenge, because that's part of our responsibility as well. So any thoughts on how the regulation of city parks and facilities?
I guess when you bring up legal hot water, in my opinion or experience, it's always best to just work with what you've got. People have been using it. It's been on the books, and maybe we just need to flesh it out more so that it can be properly utilized. I don't know if maybe the staff could tell me if I'm if that's something they could work with, or would they feel that like they need to start over? I'm talking about Section 2510.
You're talking Section 2510, yeah. Correct?
Mm-hmm. We can talk about it. Okay. Just from staff's experience and all of the years in observing our city parks, everyone in the five cities uses our parks, and there's no technical sports field in our parks. So we have every patch of grass being loved to death in our parks. So, and that's what I call it. Our parks are being loved to death every day. And those impacts are what, I mean, that's what our parks are for. But when we get to the point where they're so overused and we cannot keep up with existing maintenance and issues and those types of things, and liability, and we don't know what these groups are doing, or if they have a bounce house out in the middle of the grass, or if they have things that we can't keep up with in terms of the impact. So that's what we were getting toward in terms of the number and knowing what the groups were doing and controlling those activities.
I understand. I guess so. Really, what I'm saying is let the facilities be your guide on a number. So I think that, at least in my view, but it's only my view, so I don't know if there's
I guess going along with what you're saying, then there are other issues at play here than that are requiring the 15 rather than simply what's going on in Ramona Park. And if that's the case at the next go-round, you know, maybe put in that information along with the parking spaces, and then maybe we will understand, you know, what number we need and why, and it's not, and maybe there's a lot more justification than we know, and
well,
I'd like to know.
And yeah, I think that yes, that would help.
I concur with that. If I can add one point of the discussion to it as well is there's, no matter what ordinance we enact beyond this one, it's going to have an impact on staffing. So, I mean, I can see going as far down to 15 is going to have a huge amount on staffing. So, and I think even any number in between is going to have an impact on staffing of how the permits are generated and so forth. And so I think there's a balance of with regards to how low does the number go versus the capacity of the park versus a larger scale event.
Yeah, and I mean, just philosophically, I mean, I could get to 15 people, like I said, just sitting on my sofa going, boy, it's a beautiful day out in Grover Beach. Let me call some of my friends and let's go down to the park. Oh, whoa, it's 16 of us. So I got to call two of my friends back and say, you can't come. Sorry, doesn't work. 50 people? Maybe you got to do more planning. 100 people, you definitely have to do planning. That's kind of, you know, that's the thought process that I have. And I know the pink elephant in the room is people's kitchen, but I appreciate the effort, but I just can't get there from a legal and from a ethical standpoint. So I want to be very honest about how we're crafting this. It's going to affect all our parks, and if the people's kitchen or vagrancy continues to be an issue, let's deal with it directly. And I appreciate your comment, City Attorney and Chief and Mr. Miller and Kathy, but I just philosophically can't get there. So I think, you know, if we can flesh out, bring more issues to help us understand, look at the, because even if people are coming here from different cities, we still can only accommodate so many people. So let's figure out what that is and then come up maybe with a number that may be a little more, a little that we can at least defend if someone wants to challenge it. Chief.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the other question I might have on some direction is a combination of Chapter 10 and Chapter 11, combining the parade ordinance with the current special event ordinance in order to kind of combine the two and make it easier for someone that comes in. There's one ordinance to work with. We don't get a conflict of multiple ordinances, and we're able to use the same process for whatever situation arises.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Is everyone okay with that?
Yeah, great idea.
Okay.
along that line, and perhaps I missed it, but perhaps this is a question for the chief or for Kathy or maybe the fire chief. I see that we're proposing to remove the 3900 section of fireworks. So did I miss the discussion as to the thought process behind it, or is that just in here because it's not applicable? I mean, we go from...
That's not being removed. That's actually a section in between the two.
Good. Okay.
It's not. Okay. This has nothing to do with the fireworks or the fireworks permitting process that Ms. McClure referred to as far as nonprofit.
That's a separate... Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just thought I'd missed it. Just wanted to make sure.
Okay. Was there anything else that staff needs direction on? Okay. So there... Go ahead.
I was going to say, and it wasn't specifically mentioned, but the city-sponsored events, how does that impact, let's say, in essence, effectively Stone Soup at this point is a city-sponsored event? So what happens if a circumstances arises where it's no longer a city-sponsored event?
If it is not a city-sponsored event, it is subject to the ordinance.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so whether it's Stone Soup or whoever, would end up being subject to this. And so my next question, or my last idea, concept to throw out here, is obviously this event, or excuse me, this special event ordinance is going to take some time to go through whatever process, and I'm not sure if we want to send it back to Parks and Rec for their concurrence, or it comes directly back to us first. It is fairly different than what Parks and Rec initially provided input on.
Well, I would think they should come back to us with maybe a draft ordinance with all the comments and direction we've given, and then we can refer it to Parks and Rec and let them weigh in at that point. Okay. And I know that it's taken a long time, but I think it's better that we take a little more time so that we don't write bad law and an emotional law to address one specific issue. So, okay.
All right.
So
I just want to ask a question / comment. One thing the city attorney brought up is that this is our one legal stab at regulating what's going on in Ramona Park, and I think, Mayor, you've been pretty clear you don't want to go about it that way. I guess I'm still not sure how I want to go about it, but I would like to see something in a draft that I can at least think about because I'm not sure. And like I said before, I represent the people, and many, many people have begged me to legally control this. So I can't give up on that completely, and I need to see something that I can look at on that. So I just want to be clear. I still want to see something.
Well, I think come back with the options, and it'll be a council decision, and I understand because we all represent the people, and we've heard from others who tonight who've said, what about my park and my neighborhood? And if you do 15 people, their neighborhood is going to have to get a permit every time they go into a park. So I think this has been it's been good discussion. I understand where the staff was trying to go with this, and this is why we have these meetings and we do it in open session. This is truly transparency. We hear people throw that word around all the time. This is transparency. And so you've heard our comments. You know where we're trying to go with this, and I'm sure everyone won't be happy, but, you know, that's why we get the big bucks. So with that, I think we've given staff some direction. Why don't we take a 7-minute break? Let's reconvene at 8:30. We're going to reconvene the Grove Beach City Council meeting of Monday, May 4th, 2015. And I believe we are now on item number 8, and this is authorization to solicit bids for construction of street improvements on Brighton, Nice, and South 7th Street. Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, you have the floor.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. Oh, excuse me. This is very loud. Honorable Mayor and City Council, as the Mayor mentioned, I'm Greg Ray, your Public Works Director and City Engineer. Tonight we're looking at the beginning of the Measure K-14 project, and in particular authorization to bid three streets for construction, and also looking for some council direction. So going quickly into the background, on April 6th, the council authorized staff to proceed with implementation of the street rehabilitation repair program and identified Brighton, Nice, and South 7th as the first streets to receive improvements. Design work and preparation of plans and specs for bidding are about 95% complete. And at the April 6th council meeting, staff indicated that we would return to council with for authorization to bid and for consideration for the purpose of seeking direction on final design options. The project, as designed, would consist of rehabilitation of Brighton Avenue between 13th Street and Oak Park Boulevard, Nice between 12th and 13th Streets, and South 7th Street between South 7th Street between West Grand Avenue and Rockaway. Work primarily involves grinding and overlaying the existing asphalt street except for South 7th, which will receive a complete new asphalt section. In order to transition between the new street paving and existing improvements, a select number of new driveways will be constructed, and portions of concrete, curb and gutter, or asphalt cement dikes or curb will be added to the street edge. A copy of the construction plans is included in your staff report as an attachment. I'm showing one of the sheets here on the overhead, so if we have questions, I can hopefully zoom in. I'm sorry it's a little blurry, so I'll try to, hopefully we can zoom in enough that you can see it. So moving on to discussion. This project is the first, as I mentioned, of the major K-14 bond-funded projects to be implemented. And it does provide a unique opportunity to address some of the design options that staff expects to arise on other streets as we progress through this program. We're seeking council direction on some of the design alternatives so that hopefully a future design process can be streamlined and, of course, move faster. And so the first item to consider is narrowing of the streets. Based on a field review of the streets identified, they primarily fall into two categories, and that's streets that are really wide. They're much wider than 46 feet, 13th, Long Branch, portions of Brighton, Newport, are very wide streets. And then there's the streets that are currently either plan lined or actually have pavement widths at 46 feet. Staff in particular is seeking council direction on the 46-foot wide streets tonight. Narrowing on both sides of the streets allows us an opportunity to reduce the pavement area by approximately 23%. And as we know, the benefits include reduced construction costs, reduced future maintenance costs, and, of course, traffic calming. But, unfortunately, if there's a significant number of improved lot frontage along one side of a street in a particular block, that side of the street can probably not be narrowed without significant additional expense. The additional costs, of course, are primarily related to construction of new driveway aprons and concrete curb and gutter to restore frontage improvements to original condition. Staff is currently recommending that a 46-foot wide street be narrowed to 36 feet when it's cost-effective to narrow both sides of the street and to 40 feet when it's cost-effective to narrow only one side of the street. 36-foot street is about the minimum we'd recommend. That's 18-foot, two 10-foot travel lanes and two 8-foot parking lanes. Considering present and future costs, and by that I mean future slurry seals, overlays, and reconstruction, one side of the street can be effectively narrowed when there are three or less improved lot frontages. And for reference, there's about six lot frontages per block. The other item we're seeking direction on is construction of concrete curb and gutter versus just an asphalt curb. The benefits of concrete curb and gutter include improved drainage, better protection of the pavement edge, reduced cost to property owners when redeveloping their lots, which, of course, could be an incentive to developing or redeveloping their lots, and eliminating the need to remove asphalt when constructing future lot frontage improvements, and possibly a longer service life. Unfortunately, concrete curb and gutter increases the cost of the pavement rehabilitation project by about $15,000 per block. So in this case, staff is recommending the project include asphalt curbs along all unimproved property frontages
and concrete curb and gutter to replace existing concrete curb and gutter in cases where the street is narrowed. And, you know, so if a lot, just to clarify that, if a lot has already improved their frontage and we narrow the street in front of them, we would restore their improvements. They would have concrete curb and gutter, a concrete driveway apron, et cetera. So moving on to the project itself, the city's design consultant prepared plans and cost estimates for each of the street segments identified. And staff has determined that on the north side of Brighton Avenue, and that's actually pictured here on the overhead, north side of Brighton Avenue between 13th and 14th Streets, and on the south side of Nice Avenue, in this case the project is between 12th and 13th Streets, there are less than three improved lot frontages, which makes narrowing the preferred alternative, and in particular narrowing on one side. So the remaining street would be 40 feet wide. Lots with unimproved frontages, per staff's recommendation, would receive a new asphalt curb, except on the south side of Nice Avenue. Now, we're going to have special cases throughout the entire major K-14 street project. So not everything's going to fit, unfortunately, in a perfect condition. But on the south side of Nice Avenue, the street grades are so flat that the design engineer is recommending concrete curb and gutter to facilitate proper drainage. So our ordinary recommendation would be, again, asphalt curb only. So finally, it should be noted that the project involves modifications to existing improved and unimproved lot frontages, and staff has not contacted the property owners to discuss the proposed improvements, but will contact them and provide information once council authorizes staff to solicit bids. Staff is estimating the construction contract could be awarded by mid-June. And jumping ahead to the fiscal impact, the engineer's estimate for construction is $649,688. The engineer estimated that just over $48,000, or almost $49,000 of the total construction cost is related to necessary waterline upgrades. And staff is anticipating additional waterline improvements may be necessary, and recommending the water fund contingency of an additional $25,000. Staff's recommended total construction budget, including soft costs and contingencies, is $821,000 for completion of these three street segments. And these costs are within the adopted budget amount. So going back to staff's recommendation, staff is recommending that council authorize staff to solicit bids for construction of the street improvements on Brighton Avenue, Nice Avenue, and South 7th Street, and is seeking direction, or recommending council provide direction to staff regarding street narrowing and construction of curb and gutter. There are two alternatives identified by staff, and that includes the recommendation I just mentioned, and also to provide alternate direction to staff. And with that, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Nice staff report. Who's got questions? You have a question?
I do, but
no. Okay.
I have a bunch, and I don't have as much expertise on this. If you guys go first, it will probably be mine.
Okay.
Will be less.
Got it. Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
Okay. So we're talking here about narrowing streets. We're talking about doing water line upgrades. We're talking about doing curbs and gutters of either concrete or asphalt. Okay, the water upgrades, I understand, comes from the water fund. Where is the curbs and gutters fund or dollars coming from?
All of this work would come from the major K-14 bond proceeds, with the exception of the waterline improvements, as you just mentioned.
Okay. It will cover curbs and gutters as well.
As necessary
as
for
necessary.
Construction of
okay.
the concrete, reconstruction of the street.
Okay. That clarifies that for me.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
I have a couple.
Only a couple?
Only a couple. So, first question on the fiscal impact. Thanks for the staff report, Greg. On the fiscal impact that we have before us tonight, does that include the what I'll call the non-widening estimate? or does that take into account anticipated direction from the council on payment width reduction?
It takes into account an anticipated council direction to reduce the pavement as identified on the design drawings in your attachment. For reference, the cost estimate, this was an unusual circumstance, but the cost estimate for narrowing was only a savings of around $3,000. So.
Say that again?
The narrowing is only about $3,000 less than reconstructing the street at full width.
So I guess that would, for me, beg the question, why would we choose that option for this street?
Well, looking at long-term costs, so savings of $3,000, why narrow the street? Why not just go full width? I mean, you know, what the heck? Looking at long-term costs, and thinking, you know, about when the major K-14 bond funds are fully expended and the city needs enough money to be able to adequately maintain the entire street network, if you had the opportunity to reduce those costs citywide by 23% or more, that would be a big deal.
Okay. I agree. Okay. So going towards what I believe you have on the screen there with regards to the narrowing, and having driven down Brighton any number of times, but not specifically remembering how the edge is defined, so the reduction in the width, would be along the south side, or the south side. So to basically define that section, because the north side has the curb already established in one location, or am I seeing that? Actually, I guess it would be where that the car is parked would actually be reduced. So their parking area would technically become the area removed. I know that I probably just wandered around way too many places in that question. So, but am I seeing we're basically proposing to move or reduce the pavement width on both sides in this option?
So on Brighton, this is the only block that is proposed for narrowing because there are fewer than three improved lot frontages on that block.
Uh-huh.
And looking at that block, you see on the north side, you can see the improved lot frontages. They're a little bit difficult to see, but if you see, let me point with the pointer here. You can see back here the dashed in concrete driveway aprons, and I'm hoping you can see that.
Yep.
It's tough to see up there, but you'll see the dashed in existing concrete driveway apron here and here, where you see, in fact, the car parked is right next to an improved frontage, and then the car in the driveway you see here is just in front of an improved driveway apron. So because there's so little improved lot frontages, there's not an excessive cost of new concrete curb and gutter and driveway aprons to replace those. And the remaining of the street then would simply receive a concrete curb. Oops, jumped ahead of plan here. Would receive a concrete curb.
So realizing I don't want to get down into the design weeds, is there a reason to either eliminate the AC dike and the concrete curb on the north side and basically have the improved line be at the length and let the remaining pavements either be used as a parking width or a parking aisle and let that deteriorate over time so that we've got a defined width of the street, but the pavement beyond that is no longer maintained. And in this instance, the curb gutter sidewalk that's already there doesn't get we're basically going to have an ultimate 12-foot sidewalk, I guess, in front of this house.
I think I followed that. So what you're saying is that, let's say, for example, you know, this is a grind and overlay. So we ground at, if you can see on that specific sheet in your attachment, we show the 17-foot half street
right.
On the north side there. So if we were to grind along that line end to end and then repave
or overlay along that line, you'd have new pavement. But the existing pavement, where you see it kind of wandering in and out along the north side there, would just simply remain. Now, if you look toward the east side of that, you'll see that the existing pavement is actually considerably narrow along the two lots to the east. It's a little difficult to see again, but you see the line projecting well out into the 17-foot travel lane there. Let me show you on
right. That's the hatched area.
Yeah, so that's the existing edge of pavement now on this street. Mm-hmm. So with that process in mind, we'd already at 17 feet be digging out, placing base, and paving that section. We'd simply be leaving this section
with a hot mix asphalt dike.
An asphalt dike along this edge, and I guess tapering out to these people's improvements and leaving them there. So your end product would be complicated. Uh-huh. you'd have a street of varying widths within a single block. I guess from my perspective, that's too confusing. For example, if I created a asphalt dike along this edge, cars would be parked here, and then cars would be parked back about 4 feet back here, and then cars along this edge would be parked sort of in this unimproved or this old asphalt area. I just think that's too confusing for traffic and for delineating the edge of pavement. If for some reason there were asphalt out to full width but no other improvements along an entire street, we did a test case similar to that on Long Branch Avenue, right in front of the school on the north side of that street, and I believe that's between 11th and 12th. We paved the travel lanes only and left the parking lane original condition as a demonstration project to show council and the public what that might look like. That was a unique circumstance where you had improved curb, gutter, and sidewalk on the entire north side, and we just looked at how could we reduce paving costs. My impression from listening to council relative to the major K-14 project is that we want a completed project when we're done. And we don't want to leave unpaved parking areas and things like that hanging out there for some future resolution. So I think I'm recommending that we kind of get to a final solution with this, with these bond funds, that we have an established width, whether it's by an asphalt dike or by improved concrete curb and gutter, and that width is uniform for at least the entire block.
And so if we go towards, and this is a great example because it's got all of those issues happening all in the same block. What would be the ultimate disposition of the existing sidewalk? So the existing one, not the newly created one.
So what would happen is you would end up with a meandering sidewalk in the portion of the lots you see here that are already improved. The sidewalk would meander back, and there would end up being a parkway.
A parkway. Okay. So it wouldn't be a double wide sidewalk. It basically be the sidewalk would stay where it is, but then the area where there's the aerial image of the car would now turn into a landscape buffer.
That's correct. And again, that you see that on the Long Branch demonstration project. Right. There is also a section on that project where we did that. We simply placed a new curb and gutter well outside of the existing curb and gutter and sidewalk, and it created a parkway area that was then available for landscaping.
Okay. So going towards your second request, for direction with regards to the AC dike versus a concrete curb scenario, would you be looking for potential direction on anything above 2% is AC dike, anything below 2% is concrete curb, or do you need it that defined, or what kind of parameters are you asking us to provide?
I think this is just a level of uncertainty with staff. I think if if in my determination a concrete dike wouldn't provide sufficient adequate drainage, I don't think I could recommend that as a project to award. I think that comes down to engineering. In this case, for example, on Nice, you don't see that up in front of you, but on Nice, it's a 0.5% longitudinal slope. Running that along an asphalt curb is just, you're not going to be able to construct that within 0.5%. So it's going to be dead flat in areas or maybe even reverse drainage in some areas.
And that's why I'm asking, are you looking for direction on anything above 2% AC is okay? Anything below 2%?
I would think anything above 1.5%, we would be, you know, thinking that AC dike was probably okay.
Okay. So that would be the kind of the specific direction you're looking for and the recommendation
right.
that you're stating. Now is 1.5 above 1.5 AC, below 1.5 concrete.
And I appreciate that clarification. I think the question becomes one if kind of in inputting that engineering judgment into the discussion. The question becomes that if AC dike would work, would council want to expend the additional funds, in the range of $15,000 per block to construct concrete curb and gutter versus ultimately as each of the properties developed they would construct concrete curb gutter and sidewalk as well as concrete driveway aprons.
With the potential question for colleagues would be that if there's a situation where there's already ultimate improvements in some sections and there's no that question is not going to come out correctly.
Self-mitigation.
Exactly. So perhaps there are locations where a concrete curb at the ultimate build line might be appropriate.
Yes.
So which would ultimately benefit the homeowners along that stretch if there was already improvements or maybe that's more of a philosophical question. So back to my actual questions. So the direction you're looking for tonight is to make the changes if we provide direction on the two questions you're asking and then ultimately get them out to bid and to prepare a full set of plans and specs and then ultimately come back to the council for award.
Right. We want to basically identify the plans you have in your bid package as the final plans and specs with very minor tweaks, and then ultimately go right out to bid. So.
Okay. So I'm assuming there's another package that goes along with this, telling people what quantities and bids and specs.
Yes.
And, I mean, yeah. I'm used to seeing something like this.
Right. Front-end specifications and detailed technical specifications. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
we
have that.
Obviously, that's either yet to be developed.
We have a draft of that already.
You have a draft. Okay. Okay, so basically you finalize that, and then it goes out to bid and comes back per your time frame in for award in mid-June. Okay. So then my last question at this point is, I forget which meeting it was already. I think it was the last meeting, or the first meeting in whatever. We hired a construction manager, a program manager for the overall program. Has he reviewed this? Is he comfortable with this?
No. So... Looking at getting to council's goal as quickly as possible, the program manager is currently focused entirely on preparing a request for proposals for design on the next component of this project, the next streets, as well as basically that for design and for construction management and construction administration and getting those tailored and ready to go out as quickly as possible. But I do anticipate a handoff at some point. We're trying to parallel process right now, to use a computer term,
right.
which gets us moving forward faster. I'm working on it. He's working on it. We're parallel getting this project done. But as soon as he's at a solid point where he can break off of the other effort and it's actually out for proposals, then he's taking over this and I'm stepping away to move to other high priority capital projects.
Okay. And so the thought is that it could be before or definitely at a contract award for that to happen.
Hopefully before.
Hopefully significantly before that.
Yeah.
So, This is more of a comment, but I'm going to say it just because I was asked by a local engineer to make sure that somewhere in the specs or on the plans or a protect in place, there's a whole series of centerline monumentation. So I'm assuming we've got something in or will be in the specs to protect that in place, or whatever the contractor, if he demolishes it or whatnot, then everything is put back the way it should be.
Yeah,
I'm assuming
law.
It's in there. Okay. That'll do it for now.
And you thought you
See,
had a wrong
list. I knew
list.
I would get lots of background if I let
So
Jeff
did
go
that
first.
Answer all your questions?
It answered a lot of mine. My questions are
oh,
actually,
questions.
Well,
no,
a lot. Ahead. But my questions are actually not that specific. I know this is, I mean, I appreciate the report, and I know this is the way that this is usually written out, but I'm having a hard time visualizing how this is really going to look, because I don't deal with these plans all the time. So I guess my question would be, when we're narrowing streets, are you saying then that one block of Brighton will be narrow and perhaps the next block won't be narrow?
Yep. That's very
that's
possible.
Exactly what he's saying.
And is that typically how cities do it? And how then would that affect the sidewalks and stuff?
That's a great question. So if you were a planned community, let's take Irvine as the perfect example. Absolutely not. Every street would be exactly the same width. There would be no variations of curb lines. And some people might say that's kind of boring. If you were any of the older towns on the Central Coast, you would find that as you drive from block to block, the street widths are virtually varying block to block, if not within block in some cases. You have that right now in Grover Beach. The street widths are narrow to wide to narrow to wide. Here's an example right now, even on the screen behind me. Half of this block is narrow just because there were no frontage improvements on those lots. So I think if an entire block is consistent, I think that provides a very nice and appealing look to that block, as well as providing enough consistency that you're not confusing drivers and you're giving the future developers or redevelopers of these lots a plan line to work with. I think beyond that, we can easily accommodate blocks varying in width.
My goal, and I think all our goals, is when we get done to not only have drivable roads, but have a beautiful city and a beautiful product. So I just want to make sure that this would be typically, let's say another older town, because I understand we're not starting from scratch. If they did something similar, this is how they would do it, allow different widths at different blocks?
It would be one of the options.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you're kind of moving from old school, where they would say we want to widen every street to some future plan line width, to the concept of road diets and narrow roads and putting more focus on the sidewalk areas and things like that. So pavement area is becoming obsolete.
Well, so then going on to sidewalks, I mean, our sidewalks will still remain in the same spot no matter what the narrowing of the streets.
So you would potentially end up with meandering sidewalks. Does that make sense? So looking at the plan behind me, and can you see the pointer behind me moving?
Barely.
I'm sorry. It's coming up as a little tiny X, and I don't know how to change that. The pointer. Okay, right here. The pointer. Maybe I can just point. How about I do that?
Actually, I believe our fire chief is looking for an electronic pointer, but I'm just guessing.
I think there is one right here.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Modern technology. So
we got lots of resources.
So looking at this, it's very difficult to see, and I apologize for that, but that is existing sidewalk right there. Now, what would happen is that existing sidewalk would remain in place. These driveways would now be extended out to the new street edge here, which this is now the edge of the street, and a sidewalk here would then meander. When this lot developed and this lot developed, they would construct their sidewalk out here,
at the edge of the street.
So right now there's no sidewalk there?
No, there's nothing there at all. In fact, there's not even any asphalt. The street edge is way out here.
So where sidewalks exist, we're trying to connect them.
Where sidewalks exist, it would be cost prohibitive to replace them or move them. And so we're trying to save, you know, costs in the project by keeping good improvements where they lie. So this sidewalk would remain here, would simply meander out to here in this area, and you would see, you know, on blocks you'd see meandering sidewalks, which is not an unusual feature in any community, including Irvine that I mentioned earlier. So
okay.
It's fairly common.
That helps, because I want this to look good when we're done, and I appreciate that you're explaining to me that other cities have made this look attractive, because that would be unfortunate to spend all this money in. And I guess going along with that question, the whole asphalt and versus concrete. So you're saying you could have one house right next to the other, that one might be concrete, because, for example, my house, we already have concrete. But if my neighbor has asphalt, all they're going to get in the improvement is asphalt.
That is correct.
But I have concrete, so if my street got narrowed, I would get concrete again because I had already done it.
That is correct.
Okay.
I would propose to leave any property owner mm-hmm. who's already made and paid the cost of improvements, we would want to leave them whole. We wouldn't want to deteriorate their property by going back to an asphalt curb.
Okay. I've seen concrete next to asphalt, so I know what that looks like, but okay. All right. That would be all my questions.
Great. And I bet you the price of your house reflected that concrete in front of it. And your neighbors reflected that asphalt. So I see Jeff fidgeting over here.
I apologize.
What do you got?
I have two more questions.
Oh.
So one of which is, how are we addressing stormwater requirements?
That's a great question. So as we understand them, and we did have a meeting with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, if the street prism is modified, then the project is required to comply with post-construction stormwater requirements. And that's a lot of language there. What does that mean? It means basically that depending on the amount of area where the street prism was modified, we would be looking at storage, treatment, attenuation of peak runoff, additional facilities, essentially, and additional costs. By and large, and certainly with the three streets you're looking at here, there is no proposal to modify the street prism or the pavement prism. And so none of these current projects would meet the threshold for post-construction stormwater requirements. Now, that's the big dollar item. During construction, the project and the contractor will be required to meet all stormwater requirements in terms of water pollution control requirements. No polluted runoff from the work, no material ending up in the storm drains or ending up scattered throughout, other city streets.
So that was the easy part of my question.
Oh.
So the second question is kind of goes into that same area with a philosophical bent. The middle of the improved area where we're proposing to bring the concrete down. That development was built to that width under conditions of approval, I'm assuming. So were they counting, and we may not know the answer at the moment, but were they counting on street parking to satisfy their on-site parking? And
you just asked my question.
Sorry about that. That was a great figure.
Let me jump in here. Yeah. To be more direct, I know you talked about reducing streets to 36 feet and doing it. The optimal would be to be able to do equal distance on each side, right? You said 10-foot travel lanes, 8-foot parking lanes. But I see a section on the screen that's showing 17 feet on one side, 23 on the other side. Are you eliminating on-street parking?
I am so glad you asked.
If you keep
that
talking,
question.
You got to my only two. I only had two questions.
If only anyway. I could write the staff report again, because after it was completed, I got this question a lot. I said, "Oh, doggone it! What's not obvious about this is that the full street width is 40 feet. You actually then end up with wide travel lanes and parking lanes retained. The difference is the center line moves over slightly. So, again, these streets don't have painted center lines. Okay. You won't see it. You won't notice it. You're only changing the width 6 feet on one side. It's hardly noticeable, but the full street width is 40 feet, which provides adequate parking on both sides.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's...
I wanted to be direct, because I know that's where you were going, but go ahead.
That was a much better question. Okay. So, next question becomes, let's say the owner to the right comes in and wants to develop the property. I don't know if they're at ultimate development or not. So they basically have been provided a street frontage for something that they would have had to build. They are going to then be asked to pay the in-lieu fee? Or what are the options there?
That's a great question. So this is, you've got both cases here. You have the case to the east. Let me use the pointer again since we have it. So you have this case here. These are, have not been redeveloped. Okay, the properties have not been redeveloped. The edge of pavement is way out here. And so let's say this property went to redevelop. The condition of approval per the current development code would say that this property would construct, with the street narrowed now, this property would construct new asphalt in this area, would construct concrete curb and gutter, and then, as we mentioned, a new sidewalk, only in this case the sidewalk would meander out to this edge now. So, yes, there's a benefit to this property. Although this property would only have a asphalt curb along this edge, and that would get removed and would require a new concrete curb and gutter, this property owner would be benefiting from this much new pavement. And as the code reads, if the street is in good condition in front of you, you only have to do the little narrow strip necessary to construct the curb and gutter. So this property would benefit and have that essentially provided free of charge.
Okay. Well, it wouldn't be free of charge because they pay taxes. So.
Right.
You done?
I'm done.
Okay. Now I got to think of another question, Mayor Pro Tem Lee. In this scenario, and I like the idea of narrowing streets, and I like the idea that you're not overly complicating it, because if you had talked about reducing the right-of-way, then we get into a litany of things of saying, when you're going to talk to residents, are you going to, obviously you're extending their driveways, and would you be abandoning their right-of-way? And so then you get into a question of equity when you abandon only on one side and not the other. So I'm glad you're going down that road. But I'm curious, with this layout, your public utility easement, where does that fall within this if you're moving the sidewalk and extending driveways? Because you talked about a meandering sidewalk, but there's typically space behind the sidewalk. So
that is correct. So there's a public utility easement currently that runs basically, you can see that's the right-of-way line, if I could hold
wow.
this still.
Mm-hmm.
Way back there. The public utility easement runs in this area. Okay. Now, what's in there? If the street isn't undergrounded, cable television, mm-hmm. telephone, and power aren't undergrounded, then what? The only thing in here is overhead power lines. And so you'll see power poles. If this were clear, you could probably actually see the power poles on this. I can see them on the screen,
yeah.
And I apologize. But there's power poles in here, and there's overhead electrical. What remains okay. is that the other public utilities, anything that does go underground, gas, any of those overhead utilities that gets undergrounded, they always end up out here.
Okay.
And then, of course, the city utilities are out here. The water and sewer are in the street.
So. Great. So what is the full right-of-way width? 70 feet?
70.
I'm sorry. I'm getting. The planner in me is coming out. I'm sorry. So let me move on. The discussion on these has already been had, and I do have an opinion whether it's asphalt or concrete. But I do want to ask about South 7th, and what really concerns me is we're going to do that street. I understand the benefits from firefighting and perspective, but there is such a disparity between the crown of that street and the service station there. So have you kind of thought about how do we protect the integrity of that street once it's done, or is it just we do it and let the trailers that go through there just rip it up?
There's a problem to be fixed.
So then why don't you explain to us and the folks that are listening how that problem is going to be fixed with this project?
There is a problem with large vehicles and trailers dragging because primarily of the grade break, the difference in grades mm-hmm. between the driveway slope and the street crossfall slope. The driveway slope, of course, could be addressed and lowered, but in this case, we have an opportunity to reprofile the street. And so looking at that, we're intending to lower the crown of the street and relocate the crown such that the grade difference between the driveway slope and the street cross slope is sufficient to allow those vehicles to leave without dragging. Does that mean that no vehicle's going to drag that street? No, even in the flattest of streets the most perfect driveways, there are still vehicles that are trailering way too low, and this is a gas station that receives relatively heavy use. So there's still potential, but we're going to, by design, eliminate that to the extent possible.
I think that's a great answer, and I think you get a gold star for that because in the past we've just added more paving and not addressed the situation, so kudos to you. So I think those are all of my questions. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address? Of course. Sharon. Well, I said, of course, you're the only one, so I want you to speak. So that's right. I don't. Is that mic not working?
Mayor and council member, in the meantime, maybe if I can just chime in on one minor issue that came to my attention and may need to be just double-checked. We're, at least judging by the plans, we are going to have at intersection streets that don't line up. In other words, on one side of the intersection, the street's going to enter at a different place where it exits on the other side of the intersection. It would be my recommendation that if that hasn't already happened, I don't know if it did or didn't, that we run this by the CJPIA.
Okay.
In order to make sure that that approach is something they can get behind.
And thank you for bringing that up because I wasn't going to ask the question. I was going to make the comment with respect to, I think this kind of goes back to some of your question of the varying widths of streets. Typically, the most important geometric on the street when you talk about from one street to the other through an intersection is do the center lines match up, correct? And I think that's why you were proposing 23 feet on one side and 17 on another, correct?
That is correct. And so I was hoping I could find the...
But I think it probably to double-check would be a good thing. Sharon, you have the floor.
I just have a couple of... one is a comment and one is a question. As a member of the public, and not to... up on all of this, I've read and reread staff's report and recommendations. Online, the diagrams were totally unreadable, at least on my... I mean, I have a small computer screen, but I couldn't gather anything from that. And so I've tried to follow what was going on here tonight, and for me, photographs of the areas concerned would be very, very helpful, in addition to the diagrams. But I think that a lot of of what you were even questioning was the fact that you couldn't visualize exactly what it looked like, what it looks like now, and, you know, and then you could point to it and say, oh, yeah. So that would be a suggestion for future projects. The other thing on Brighton that came up, did I understand correctly that there, well, maybe I should ask it a different way. Are there currently storm drains on that block, 13th to 14th? And how would those, if there aren't, should there be? Because I'm thinking, if you have, heaven forbid, we should get rain. But, I mean, it hasn't been unheard of around here where we've had lots of rain. And rain pouring over any street surface is going to have a negative impact. So maybe storm drains at this point, if we're looking toward the future, is also a good idea. And that's all I have.
Great. Thank you, Sharon. And excellent comment regarding photos. So that's something we should look at. Greg, storm drains issue that was
brought up? By and large, there are very few, if any, storm drains in the city of Grover Beach. The primary storm drains that we do have run down Grand Avenue and actually from about 5th Street to the beach. And we have storm drains in Mentone, which is an area of Mentone and Trouville, which are areas of known flooding that have been resolved by those storm drains. And then we have storm drains leading primarily down 13th, in the area of 13th and 16th Streets, to the Mentone Basin Park. The remainder of the city carries storm water in the streets. That has been accommodated by a city standard that includes an 8-inch curb face, which is unique to the city of Grover Beach. So the street has additional carrying capacity for that storm water. Would it be ideal to have storm drains throughout the city? Absolutely. Can you afford it? Not with the current income that the city has. But it's something that certainly could be considered as a future future council priority. I think at this point in time, in the context of this discussion, storm drains are probably off the table.
And Greg, on a portion of Brighton and probably Nice, we are including a concrete cross gutter, correct, which would help with drainage.
I'm glad you brought that up. It was very briefly mentioned in the staff report, but here's a good example. And actually, this will cover two questions. You can see a concrete cross gutter here.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you could see the whole street. Also on the other side, a brand new concrete cross gutter constructed here. We definitely want to make sure that we're not trapping water out in the middle of these intersections like you see on some of the asphalt intersections.
Yeah.
So that's an upgrade that will happen throughout this project. The other thing I think that was mentioned, if you'll allow me to answer that question, the issue of what do you do about widening and narrowing? It's funny this comes up here on 13th, actually. Although 13th isn't part of the project per se, there are varying street widths on 13th Street today, and they're addressed in a number of different ways. But with this project, we're acknowledging that this entire block of 13th from, two blocks of on 13th from Nice Avenue all the way down to Farrell are actually narrow. And then there's a couple blocks, 2 to 3 blocks just north of Nice, that are actually wide, and then it narrows again as you go toward Grand Avenue. And so here is a situation where we are creating a bulb out, meeting the requirement to construct a new ADA curb ramp, creating the new cross gutter so we don't trap drainage, but addressing that difference in street widths here with a bulb out, and Cars will, of course, be able to park up to the bulbout, but once you get to this portion, they won't be able to park out in the street. So that'll define your pavement edge. We would be looking to address that narrowing, widening issue in every case that it exists so that you're not abruptly approaching parked cars in a travel lane.
Yeah, and I think for anyone who really want to understand the value of cross gutters, if you just drive up 13th Street, you look at Grand and 13th on the north side, you can see where it's rutted and worn out because there's not a concrete cross gutter. If you look at 13th, that where it intersects with Brighton coming down the hill, there's not a concrete cross gutter, so that's rutted out too. I mean, you just got to drive around and see, and you'll get a much better appreciation of that. So I think we've don't have any more questions from the public. We've brought it back to the council. I think we've asked a lot of questions and got really good answers. So what's the pleasure of the council?
I'll start. I just had one kind of follow-up question. I think I know the answer, but I just want to make sure. So what we're saying now is where there are some places in the city that have no curbs, now everyone, once we're done with their street, will have a curb. It might be concrete. It might be asphalt. But they will have a curb where maybe in some places right now there are no curbs.
That is correct.
Okay. And so I guess my personal opinion, I like what the direction we're headed. I'm sure other people have more technical comments and suggestions than I can fathom right now at 9:26. But my concern would be, you said you would be reaching out to some homeowners anyway, and my thought would be those homeowners that are perhaps only getting an asphalt curb, and maybe people who don't have sidewalks, if they could be aware that, hey, if you're willing to pay a little more, you can have concrete at this time, and this might be the most effective time to do it, and a sidewalk as well, if we could possibly, you know, set that up. And that might be a way that at least in some places we could get more concrete and more sidewalks. So that's all.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
Actually, I don't think I have any right now.
Okay. Jeff?
I'm going to bounce off Councilmember Shaw's question there. So that almost begs direction to staff, maybe after this, to say, do we want to have a understanding? I don't know if it rises to the level of an ordinance or a street improvement option to say, okay, if you want your frontage done, it's going to cost this much per linear foot. And if you're willing to pay that, then maybe that's alternate direction. Is that where you're looking to proceed?
I'm not sure. I guess so. you supply the technicality. I just think the concrete looks so much nicer, and if you're going to be building asphalt in front of someone's house, I'm not even sure how much more it would cost to change to concrete. Okay. But if people had the option to pay that, maybe some would.
So I think that what we should do is let's make a motion to address this. Let's give some direction, because I think that's something that doesn't have to be part of the bid package, but certainly giving staff that direction to inquire and say to the owners they have that opportunity. But let's not, it's obviously not going to be part of the project, but it is definitely a question that should be asked. Okay? I mean, I think it's a good idea. I know long ago we actually were able to do something like on, and I want to say Saratoga between 13th and 14th. Yep. So anyway, okay?
So unless there's any other comments, I'm ready to make a motion.
I think you should try a motion.
Then I will go ahead and that we recommend that we authorize staff to solicit bids for the construction of street improvements as shown on the provided plans for Brighton Avenue, Nice Avenue, and South 7th with the direction provided for widths as well as concrete curbs versus AC dikes with corresponding slopes.
So I do want to get let's see, that's a motion. Is there? I'll second that motion, but I do want to get clarification on Nice Street that they're recommending concrete where it's really concrete instead of the asphalt for drainage purposes because it's flat, but I'm not sure if there's value to doing that. Is that part of your motion, or what's your thought on that?
It would be part of my motion. It's the recovering engineer in me. So with realizing that anything under a percent and a half is going to chew up the asphalt much quicker than the concrete curb, which is why I would be supportive of going to concrete below a percent and a half.
Okay, so with that understanding, then I will keep my second on that. So if there's no additional discussion on that motion, I think we can do this by a voice vote. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. Motion carries. And then I think there was a direction that we had talked about staff when they get to the proper point to ask the folks who may have an opportunity to upgrade from asphalt to concrete. We're not going to pay for it, but see if they would be willing to work in concert with us.
And just to add to that, we can easily determine the cost to the city of the asphalt curb that we would have constructed. If we're not constructing that, there's a slight savings. We could easily add in into even this project or future projects a bid alternate that would include concrete curb and gutter. Well, actually, you already have concrete curb and gutter, driveway aprons, and sidewalk included in the project in small pieces. We could simply have a 50-foot lot bid alternate item in there so that then we could provide that price to a property owner. And if we took out the savings by not building the asphalt curb, it might be less expensive than them doing it themselves. You have to keep in mind the issue of prevailing wage. We're paying prevailing wage, so.
Yeah, and then I also want to make sure that negotiation does not slow down getting these roads done.
Right.
That's the caveat, and that no parking is lost, because if that was the proposal, this would be a completely different discussion. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a motion. We're moving forward, and we have direction. So let's move on to the next item.
Actually, before we do that,
yes,
can we take a collective sigh and say we're building streets. So the community has made an amazing.
Not. I
mean, we haven't turned dirt yet, but we've.
That's
we've,
right.
We've overcome another significant obstacle in getting our streets moving forward.
So order the shovels, get some equipment. I mean, like, I guess I will do that when they're turning and grinding asphalt.
That'll just be another point where I'm going to say the community is doing wonderful things.
Okay.
Along with staff.
Very good. All right. So let's move on to item number 9. This is continued preliminary budget discussion and request for direction. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as you recall, during the last meeting, I presented the council with a preliminary budget report. Essentially, the purpose of that report was to outline by the major fund some of the constraints and opportunities we have within each of those reports. Within each of those funds. I did not want to repeat my review of that information. It's attached to this staff report, and during the last meeting we also discussed the possibility of moving ahead with a utility study. I did want to just spend a moment and talk about that a bit. Utility studies are good for a number of reasons. They should really realistically be done every 4 to 5 years. The purpose of the study is not only to determine whether the revenues are meeting the operational costs of the system, but it's also to take a look at the system itself and make a determination as to whether it's working efficiently and whether there is a need to or a possibility of doing things a bit differently that can save costs, actually. The other part of the utility study is it does review existing rates with the existing costs. And in light of the recent court decision, there's ever more reason to review it from that perspective. One of the things that a review of this type would look at is actually our rate structure to make sure it's appropriate and determine whether there is other alternatives that might better be considered given the current state of the law. The other thing, the other item I wanted to bring to your attention is we really do need to adjust our reserve policies. Current reserve policies are pretty much an operational reserve policy, requires 10% of the operational fund to be retained in a reserve. Actually, what we should do, especially with the increasing age of our system, we should be looking out forward to determine whether we're actually putting aside sufficient funding in a restricted reserve to ensure that we've got the dollars available to replace infrastructure when it becomes necessary. So for all of those reasons, staff is recommending that the council provide direction to initiate the study. The purpose would simply to bring that information back to you sometime next fall before determining whether any adjustments were necessary in terms of the rate structure. Finally, I just, as I said before, went through the report extensively last meeting. This is also the council's alternative or option to provide any direction that the council may think fit in terms of the general fund and the remaining major funds that were covered in that report. In terms of the development of the budget, we're still looking at having the draft document to you by the end of the month or the 1st of June, and then we will do actual budget deliberations during the month of June. That concludes my report. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions of staff? None to my left?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee?
Okay. Thank you for that report, Bob. The discussion for the utility study seemed to revolve around water and wastewater. Would you recommend stormwater in
yes.
there as well?
Okay. Yes.
So, because I guess one of the questions was, we have a fee structure for
right.
For the stormwater, and did we expend more than what was budgeted on that this year?
Is that looking for a deficit this year? Do you recall, Gayla? Stormwater portion of the yes.
Okay. So and I'm trying to recall if we augmented that during the course of the year with general funds monies or how
that would be most. If you recall, the actual fund was combined stormwater and wastewater. So in essence, what happens in that case is existing reserves in the wastewater fund would cover only ever any over expenditure.
Okay. Okay. So with regards to the audit reserve policy, you said 10%. So how much is that per year approximately?
Realistically, if, for instance, in your water fund, your operational budget is about $3 million. So that's a minimum of $300,000. It's not to say that you can't have more there.
Right.
It's just not restricted specifically for equipment or infrastructure replacement.
Okay. Okay. So this may be a comment, but it also may be a question. So tell me if I go too far afield, Mr. Mayor. With regards to the utility rate study, realizing we're going to have another item later in the agenda is to set a special meeting potentially to talk about water.
Yes.
I think we heard it in public comment earlier, and then there's any number of other conversations we've had with regards to how we calculate the water rates and what's going to proceed, how we're going to proceed there. I'd like to see us build into that utility rate study, if that's the direction we go in, some method of I don't know if it's a complete rethinking of how we're charging for those rates in order to address the conservation mm-hmm. that's already happened or will happen, and then also attempts to address what the state's doing. So if someone has any, or either staff or public or council has any thoughts on how we might craft a language for part of the RFP to give direction to staff on with regards to that.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, I think that will follow naturally because one of the things that you're going to want to do, especially in city attorney will amplify, but you're going to want to make sure that whatever rate structure you end up taking a look at, it's tied more directly to costs. And so that item would then be dealt with in that way. In terms of some of the questions that were brought up earlier relative to, you know, the in essence, the fines and penalties and how they're being applied, that really needs to potentially come back to the council for a different discussion yeah. mm-hmm. as to whether, you know, where we are with that process, how have we been able to, what kind of conservation we've been able to achieve that point, and what you want, may want to do in terms of the future.
So it sounds like that would be appropriate for that special meeting.
Yes.
More appropriate there. Two more quick items, and I'm not sure if it's here or if it's in another location as part of the budget, but and I'm not sure the appropriate term of it, whether it's a business audit, whether it's an efficiency audit, whether it's a internal resource audit. Is that here, or is that something we move forward with as the overall budget?
So we know there's a financial audit. I think maybe that's a communication that maybe we'll bring up and figure out. Do we want to put that on the agenda and have that discussion?
Certainly. I think what you're talking about is management audits in general, and we can bring that back.
Okay. And I wasn't sure if somehow that gets tied into the capital program or the utility programs or.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think. Well, why don't you just keep moving, and we'll have a discussion later. Maybe not part of this. We don't want to bog down.
Okay. And then just before I forget, as part of the budget discussion, I think I referenced this last time, but the Ramona Parking Committee did request that we have a effectively a rate study for the assessment districts put into next year's budget so we can begin to then have the council make a decision as to what it we know what it's going to cost, and then we can make the final decision on the assessment district, which would but the initial cost for the rate study for that would go into this year's budget at the request.
So I'm trying to figure out the logistics of that, if that needs to be a if that's an agenda item and a discussion on the council and direction on what would be put into the budget.
Mr. Mayor, you can. The first step would be to, in terms of Ramona Square, would be to get an engineering study to determine what those actual improvement costs are. I think that's what the first step would be. And actually, it would be appropriate if that's the direction you wanted to provide at this time. And we would wrap that discussion into part of the overall budget review that comes back in June.
Okay. So then let's put that down and have that conversation. Okay. Anything else?
The last question I believe I have has to go with regards to the capital improvement program funding. I don't see I see some program costs for waterline replacement, but I don't see the CDBG program.
It is in the capital program.
Okay, it's just not
perhaps listed.
Much. Listed. Okay, perfect. Just wanted to make sure of that. Thanks.
Okay.
Yep.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Let's see if anyone from the community would like to address that before the council. No? Okay. Well, boy, you asked all of our questions. It's good.
Just one more.
Okay, so we're coming back to the council, and so let's see. So staff, your recommendation is that we authorize staff to initiate utility rate study and provide direction to complete development of the fiscal year 16 budget.
Right.
So let's get to the let's just go straight to the utility rate study, and I think I had expressed concerns previously. But in light of the recent ruling regarding tiered rates and staff, I know you put this in a staff report. I guess for no other reason, we need to take a look and see what that impact is going to be on water rates.
Yes.
Okay. So is everyone okay with that direction on the utility rate study?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So then let's talk about other elements with respect to the budget. Jeff, you brought up the management audit. City Attorney, I want to see, is that something we need to place on a separate agenda to give that direction?
That's entirely a council's decision. From a legal standpoint, you can certainly direct the city manager to place it on the in the budget, and then as you're adopting the budget, you can have a discussion as to whether or not that item is something that you wish to fund.
Okay.
If you desire a more in-depth discussion regarding how that process would proceed or what exactly you're looking for, then that probably should be placed on an agenda and talked through more thoroughly.
Okay. So what's the pleasure of the council on that particular one?
I think, I don't know if we need to have a separate discussion on it, personally, but I don't even know how much one of those costs.
Yeah, so I think we should have a separate discussion just on that.
Just outside the budget process.
Okay, do we have a consensus on that?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I'm not familiar enough with the process to weigh in right now.
Great. And then the Ramona engineering study. So, Jeff, any idea of the cost or something like that?
The discussion we had internally, and perhaps our city engineer can confirm this for me, even though he wasn't part of the discussion, the estimated cost was in the $10,000 to $25,000 range. So I think my thought process was if we allocated $25,000 for it, and see where the ultimate budget discussion went with that. If we needed to cut somewhere or whatnot, 25 was the conservatively high number.
Okay. Yes.
And was that with is it the council's direction that amount be budgeted for without provisions for repayment in the event the project doesn't move forward?
That would be.
That's a discussion.
That would be the discussion, right? I would support that from the standpoint is the committee had the conversation of how do I say it correctly? The assessment district was the responsibility of the city. And whether it expired or whether we no longer continued to encumber the funds or collect the funds, the improvements to the parking lot need to be made whole. If we can either make the determination to abandon it and let it go towards the private property owners, but for the cost of the engineering audit, there seems to be support from the current ownership to re-establish an assessment district there. And if it was to be re-established, then that cost for the engineering report could be rolled into that.
Okay.
Mayor, if I may ask a question.
Yes.
It wasn't unanimous? In other words, if everybody agrees to form an assessment district, then probably don't need an engineering report.
By actually, we'd still need an engineering report to determine what their cost would
be. The cost, but not an assessment. Yeah.
I believe where the reason I say not unanimous is because there were some, and maybe the chief can back me up on this one, there are some property owners who may not want to participate.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Because I'm just wondering, you're right. I mean, do you really need an engineer and that extensive a report, or is it better to say there's going to be, I think the council decided that we would, in fact, look at moving forward and doing improvements, because obviously some of the parking lot is owned by this entity, and so how do we budget that and make sure we have some funds available if we take the next step? So,
and perhaps it's a matter of defining what that engineer's report would do. With regards to the fact that yes, this is a we do have part of that. If it's supportable, then we need to know what the costs are, and perhaps it's a two-tiered report. Here's what it's going to cost. We go to the owners and say, if you're supportable, we're going to move forward with the assessment reestablishment or establishing it.
So let me ask you this question, Bob. What is your timing in bringing a draft budget back? I know you said June.
June, correct.
Okay, but there's 4 weeks in June, so.
June 1st. The target date is the end of May. June 1st is the council meeting, and my thinking is that we would release the draft at that council meeting.
So how's May 18th looking on the docket?
May 18th.
Right? Well, what's today?
Yeah, no, okay. It's correct. On the May 18th, we have a couple of public hearings at this point. It's a application for public conveyance and necessity. That's usually what you call a taxi application. First reading of an ordinance regarding the skate park regulations to allow scooters. We have a couple of consent items. Business is okay. Green.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm just wondering because I'm trying to figure out how we can have this discussion and not hold up the budget. And I'm just wondering if we should have it on the agenda for the next meeting and maybe have a discussion about what that engineering report covers.
Okay.
I don't know if that's doable given that it's May 4th.
My suggestion would be, if possible, I would just work with staff in identifying what those costs are. I would incorporate those in the draft budget, and then you would still have an opportunity to review it and determine whether there's a reason to include it or not, move forward with it.
Okay. City Attorney.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council members. If in fact there is even one property owner that would oppose to an assessment, my recommendation is that it would be a full study because it needs to survive a potential challenge.
Yeah, okay. So then I think the direction is, so we'll go ahead and give that direction for staff to work with staff, identify what you think a reasonable cost is, and then we can vet it through the budget process. That works. Okay.
Can I ask a question on it just so I'm sure,
sure.
I understand? So we're saying for the engineering study it may be $10,000 to $25,000. So that's just a study to understand what needs to be done, right?
It would provide an estimate of costs to complete the improvements, and then also to develop potential annual assessment costs for the property owners.
Okay, because I would just say, I know at our last meeting we never really agreed what part the city would pay. So I mean, we can put it in the draft, but I don't know that the city should foot the whole bill for the study. And others may be maybe they should participate, depending on how you guys decide in your subcommittee things are going.
And I believe the direction from the subcommittee was that it was recommended that the city do this initial cost. So, and then if it does fail, then there, that would be a cost that the city would incur. So if it did pass, then those costs would be absorbed into the assessment.
So I think that therein lies the disconnect is. How does the council have full discussion so that we're clear that the council majority is saying this is what we want to do? And are you both confident we can do that through the budgetary process?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Then we will have that conversation.
Okay.
Okay. And I think that was it, right, Jeff? Do you have anything else?
That's all I had.
So was there anything else you were looking for direction on, Bob?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, and I agreed with you. I think one of the other things you did bring up was the adjustment of the reserve policies. But you were looking at it from a standpoint of streets. I'm thinking we take a look at it from a standpoint of all things reserve, emergency reserves, and things of that nature. So we'll have that conversation during the budget hearings. So I think that is sufficient direction to staff. So if staff feels that you have sufficient direction,
yes.
I think we've concluded that item. Okay. So we didn't have any pooled consent agenda items. How about council committee reports? Council member Shaw.
I have a couple because we didn't do them last time because we had such a long, long, long meeting. So I've had two visit slow meetings to report on, but the heart of the matter is that there was supposed to be a vote before the Board of Supervisors to hopefully approve this TMD, and it has been delayed, and it will now be happening, I think it's June 10th, which was not foreseen necessarily. So our first meeting, which took place on April 15th, there was a lot of discussion as to, okay, how are we going to proceed from here? Because, you know, being a business-based group, they want to start marketing, and then those of us on the committee from the government are saying, well, you're about to be a government entity. How can you start functioning when you're not even authorized to function? And so there was kind of a push-pull as to how to proceed. So then we all decided to schedule another meeting. So the next meeting, they came back to us with more of a plan. And as of June, Visit Slow no longer will be funded because they were funded in the past by all of us cities, and that will be no longer. This June 10th vote, if the TMD is approved, then Visit Slow will have to go and get a bridge loan to keep functioning, because even if they began collecting the money on day one, they're not going to have any money through the summer, which is a huge tourism season, and they obviously don't want to shut down. So if the vote goes through on June 10th, then they'll have to go and get a bridge loan based on the vote. If the vote does not go through on June 10th, I'm not really sure what happens at that point, and I don't think anyone wants to think about that. And then it was decided that the Visit Slow now has appointed its transition committee, which includes each lodging representative, and our lodging representative here in Grover Beach is Sam Miller of the Holiday Inn Express. I spoke with him, and he's starting to get oriented to all this. He's very young and energetic and excited to be a part of it, but I think it's a little overwhelming. So he's starting to get up on things, and Chuck Davison, who is here today, is going to meet with him specifically to get him oriented. And I gave everyone a real talking to, that we in Grover Beach want to be just as important as everybody else, and we're not, you know, just to be forgotten, so you make sure Sam knows what's going on. So they did. And the transition committee is then going to work on, then within the transition committee, there's going to be a nominating committee. And the nominating committee is going to help choose the marketing professionals that are going to be running the marketing and actually controlling the money. And Judith Bean from the Rio Grande Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce is one of the people applying for that, and will hopefully be on there representing our small interests here, which I think is great. So then they just talked about how even though the group is not necessarily approved until June 10th, they're pushing forward with this transition committee and pushing marketing, and they have a marketing agency RFP out, and they're pushing forward because shoulder season is towards the end of the summer, and that's their big season, and they can't just stop. So they're moving forward, and the office location of Visit Slow will probably be moving back to San Luis Obispo from Paso, just to be more central. So that's interesting. The only other meeting I had was I'm our Community Services Policy Committee representative for the League of Cities. So I went to that meeting and got some interesting information, some interesting presentations. There's some bills pending about electronic cigarettes to hopefully clarify how we're supposed to treat these things. And the bill that we decided to support through the League of Cities is a bill that would treat all electronic cigarettes the same as tobacco. Because I was surprised to learn there are some products that you can buy even when you're under 18. And they just want to start treating that all like tobacco. There was another bill we discussed to raise the smoking age to 21, which I was in favor of, but nobody else was, so we are not supporting that. And then there was another bill about synthetic turf and just its cancer-causing effects, and Kathy and I actually discussed that to make sure nothing, we don't have any of that going on in Grover Beach, which we don't, and we don't plan to. But we decided not to support a bill. The bill was to put a moratorium on synthetic turf until 2017, in which where there could be more of a study. But our committee thought that was too lenient because they said, well, why wait till 2017? We know that using recycled tires causes cancer. And also the moratorium was, if you already started using it and you made a good faith effort, you can still use it. So the committee thought that wasn't drafted strictly enough, so a no-go. Other than that, we got an interesting presentation on some programs that are being implemented in light of AB 109 and many more prisoners coming out of prison, and just some programs some other cities are doing to help reorient these prisoners so they don't keep becoming reoffenders. And the chief and I had a long talk about those issues and how we could maybe do some of those things in our area. And got an update on AB 1147, which regulates massage parlors, and we're already doing that here too, so we're up on it. So I think that was all I had.
I can't have any massage parlors in this city. Councilmember Nichols.
Yes. My first meeting that I was supposed to go to with the Friends of Prado was postponed, but they did not put me on their mailing list, so I went. And I got to see the facility at least at Prado, which I had not been to before, and make some connection with the people who work there. Then I had a CAPSLO meeting on April 16th. The focus was largely on getting the Head Start program going. The migrant Head Start is in enrollment is up by 600 students at all the centers that are open. In Fresno, in June, had 500 kids enrolled in their Head Start programs.
Wow.
The executive committee decided to change how the meetings are being handled. Liaison reports, reports only, not handouts, and we're with the departments. We're not going to go department by department. We're just going to do general to try and limit the time frame of our meetings. And that was about it on that. The South County Transit meeting was on the 29th. Unfortunately, it was the day that they terminated an employee who has been with this facility for 13 years. Mr. Peralt, she still has a Skelly hearing available to her as far as part of the program. Let's see. Oh, the youth ride was a big topic of comparing the South County transit usage on it with North County with slow transit and that sort of stuff. And we've been doing it for 3 years down here. The first year, the ridership was in the low thousands. The next year, it jumped significantly, and then it fell back down a little bit this past summer. So they were talking about ways that they could boost the ridership and other ways to make it easier for the students to get on board with it. And they're doing outreach to summer camp programs, the YMCA or YWCA, and that sort of thing to line up. One of the problems they're running into is if three different camps decide to have a day trip on the same day, and we've got groups of, you know, 15, 20 people boarding the bus at a time, that doesn't leave any space for the normal riders. So that has to be set up in advance and limited to 10 riders and two adult chaperones. And that's about it.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
My only meeting this time around was the Economic Vitality Committee or Corporation, and there was a presentation by the new city manager of Morro Bay, David Buckingham, and then also another presentation by Don Legg from First Solar. And as a tease, our own city manager, Bob Peralt, is going to give the city report at the next EVC. So hopefully you were aware of that.
Yes. What date is that?
May 27th.
May 27th.
Okay.
I forgot that so we're looking forward to that. That's all the only committee assignment I have. Report.
Okay.
Report on.
Great. Well, I have a SLOCOG board meeting this Wednesday, May 6th, and so we'll report back to you after that meeting. Also have a South Sanitation District meeting on May 6th. On the agenda is a citizens committee that reviewed the two proposals for the management audit. We'll be making a suggestion to the board with respect to who to hire and move forward on that. So we'll report back with you. The community continues to be engaged at the board meetings, which is a good thing, and getting a lot of feedback. With respect to the water board, we're continuing to seek a resolution, but I don't have anything to report to you tonight. Hopefully after Wednesday I'll have much more information to report to you on that particular committee. Okay. So I know that next we had council communications, and I actually have quite a bit under communication. So what I want to do is mayor's prerogative and move to the city manager's report and comments. And this is item 10, scheduling a special meeting to receive a status report regarding water resources and uses.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, staff is anxious to proceed with a full discussion regarding water sources, and we tend to have the program look at existing conditions as well as the use of our conservation efforts at this point and what we're projecting for the future, suggesting that it's an item that should be dealt with in terms of a special meeting. My thinking at this point is in suggesting something the first week in June. I believe we talked about, Mr. Mayor, June, let's see, 6th or the 8th, if I'm not mistaken, as a potential meeting date. We'd also talked about the 26th, but that's not going to work because we may be in Sacramento that day.
Okay.
6th is Saturday. I think it was June 4th and June 8th were the two dates that June 4th is a Thursday, is it?
June 4th is a Thursday. June 8th is a Monday, correct?
Yes.
Okay, council members, what are your, and I know you have to check with Councilmember Bright, but do either of those dates work for the group?
Yeah, I would prefer the 8th if other people can do it.
Both dates are open for me. Did we want to wait that long? So is I'm realizing we've, just the discussion may have some impact on the budget. Or if we wait till the 8th, it probably won't. It'll end up getting transferred into a budget augmentation after the new fiscal year.
Well, actually, we'll have you plan on submitting a draft budget on the first, but we won't finalize that until
sometime during the month. It'll be later in the month of June.
Okay.
But either day works for me.
Okay.
Either day is fine for me.
Yeah, I think Bob had checked with me, and I know Mike May has gotten pretty busy. So June 8th, can we maybe start it a little earlier, though?
It's up to the council.
I could do 6, or I could probably do 5:45.
Okay.
I know Councilmember Bright typically isn't able to get here before 5:45.
Okay, so maybe we could start at 6?
That's fine.
Good.
Okay, so maybe don't run that by. Make sure that Councilmember Wright is able to attend, and I suspect that'll be a well-attended meeting and a lot to talk about, because I think we're talking about the penalty and water use and establishing a baseline for what that looks like.
So, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So this meeting will kind of address some of the things we heard in public comment tonight and some of the letters we've been getting from people. And
I fully expect it to be a full discussion of all things water.
Sounds good.
Okay. Let's see. City Manager, do you have anything else?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. City Attorney, you have anything?
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. Just a brief update. I will be attending the City Attorney Conference that starts on Wednesday in Monterey, and if there's any information on new developments that I glean therefrom, I shall bring them back to you at the next meeting.
Very good. Okay, Council Communications. Anything to my right?
No.
Okay.
I have a couple. So just a couple of more announcements of upcoming events. Tomorrow night is a fundraiser to benefit the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, Cinco de Mayo. So and it's going to be at Finn's from 5 until 9. So they've done this a number of times in the past, and it's always been their fish. But the chef is looking forward to an actual Cinco de Mayo menu for tomorrow night. So come to Finn's for Mexican food.
Do they do that, Mexican food?
They will tomorrow night. Exactly. So the a quick shout out to a local business who's in starting to do a fundraiser. But did you realize that we have a business called Galaxy Cheer slash tumble that has two national championships. They are a cheer group and a tumbling group that actually operate out of Grover Beach. So visit their Facebook page, and they're doing some really nice events and some fundraisers. So Galaxy Cheer Tumble is the name. So, and then lastly, two thank yous. One to the Arroyo Grande Grover Beach Chamber for their participation in the tree planting this past Friday. You'll notice that there's any number, I think it's 10, being a specific number, not an any number, of New Zealand Christmas trees that have now started to outline the streets around the parking lot. Those are drought-tolerant trees for all those interested. And then also a thank you to the one-day event for all of the work that's been gone into and continues to go into up at Grover Heights Park. They're making some great progress up there, and it's looking like some great improvements.
Okay, very good. To my left.
I just had the head of the Parks and Rec Commission asked me to announce this at the last meeting, but we ran out of time, that plans have started and there was a meeting to start the process of building a park in Ramona Park, a playground within Ramona Park. And she just wanted me to report, Jeff and I were at that initial meeting, that it was a great kickoff. They have $40,000 to build the playground in Ramona Park, and actually during the meeting they got another $5,000 donated, so $45,000. And there were probably at least 15 to 20 people there. Everyone weighed in on their thoughts about where to place playground equipment, and we all voted on the types of playground equipment that we wanted to see. And also some of the Parks and Rec Commission members have been serving kids in all the elementary schools, so they've gotten tons of feedback on what kinds of equipment they would like to see too. So the project's getting going.
Okay. So I've got 11 items. I had them ordered, but I think the first one is no, I won't do that. Let me just start at my list. And one, good job on getting Phase 3 of the West Grand Avenue Street Enhancement Project going. I've gotten several calls from people because apparently pedestrians are having difficulty getting from there to the beach. So we need to really look at and see if there's a better way to facilitate pedestrian movement. I know we have a sign that says businesses are open, but anything we can do to help that, because I am getting quite a few calls and people are actually tracking me down in the grocery store. And my wife still makes me go shop. I don't understand. So the second thing is I just want to get clarification. On June 1st, we do expect to have a discussion on streets now that we have got the – okay, so – as part of that, we'll look at the batch of streets that was identified by the council, and then maybe a discussion about subsequent street.
Begin the discussion of the next phase.
Okay, then I'd also want to, I know we started talking a little bit about giving staff direction on how to treat streets when we narrow it, but there's got to be a larger discussion over our street design standards, basically what's in the circulation element and what is out there to have a more comprehensive discussion about narrowing of streets. So I just wanted to kind of just amplify that. The third thing is we talked about an ordinance earlier. We talked about the pink elephant in the room, and I know that last year before the election there were folks who had in the community who had come in and said, hey, there was supposed to be a second public meeting, and it did not occur. I don't know if there's any value in doing that again, but I know that given that we've made some great progress, I'm almost wondering if we as a group want to kind of give that some thought and decide if it makes sense to have another community meeting to receive input and get a kind of a check-in to where we really are. So I want to put that out there. Four is, I think, in all things water, we confirm we're going to look at the penalty in water use, so I won't belabor that one. Number five is, I think it's time for us to have a joint meeting with the Park, Rec, and Beautification Commission to talk about roles and responsibilities. And so I think there's benefit in doing that. I had originally thought we would do it with all of our advisory committees, but thought that it might confuse the issue. So is there any interest in doing that? And then is there an opportunity to do something like that in June? I know June is going to be a very busy month. What does the council think?
I would definitely be interested in having that meeting.
I'm supportive as well.
Okay.
Sure.
So do you want, is it better if city manager talk with everyone and see what date might work?
Yes. We'll do that with both the council as well as the Parks and Rec Commission. Their next meeting is coming up in another 2 weeks.
Okay. Okay, six.
Can I just say something about that?
Yes.
We're leaving town for a lot of June after the council meetings are done. We'll be gone basically after the 17th.
When will you be back?
The 28th.
Of June?
Yes.
Okay.
Our house alarm will be on. Since this is not doing
that. You weren't going to Facebook it? So, city manager, let's try and work with both groups. Let's find a date. I think we want to make sure that all of our advisory committees understand that they are advisory to the council, and the more knowledge we can give them, the less surprises we have about things going on. So, let me keep moving because the clock is ticking. This Wednesday, before I go to SLOCOG, I had made a commitment to Jim DeCecco, who is working on us becoming a Bike City USA. But apparently, I had told him I would ride a bike from Grover Beach City Hall to Grover Beach Elementary School.
Right.
So 8 o'clock, City Hall. Right. Come down and join us. I will have my biking gear on. I'm not going to have spandex, but I'll have a helmet. Come on, Chief. You're going to be down? Awesome.
Wednesday.
It's Wednesday, May 6th.
Right.
So maybe if I can bring my bike down the night before and leave it here, then I don't have to make the loop. But council members are welcome. Members in the community are welcome. Meet here at 8 o'clock, and it's a short ride over to Grover Beach Elementary School. Okay, let me keep moving. We've been hearing a lot from the League of California Cities, and Bob, I'll reach out to Dave Mullinex. I think it's time we got Dave Mullinex here to give us an update on some of the legislation going on in Sacramento, how it might affect us. There's some positive things, and there's a lot of negative things, and only the style and flair that Dave can bring will get him back in here. And maybe that's a July or something. Let's see. I'm going to skip those three. I'm going to get to the very last one. So the Amgen Tour of California, stage four, is going to be in the Central Coast. This year it starts in City of Pismo Beach, and they actually will start at the pier and go south on Highway 1 going by Grover Beach and the train station. So that's May 13th at about 11:30 a.m., trust me, they'll be there before 11:42. They don't ride like you and me. So what we want to try and do is get a big group there, and I'm going to try and work with a sign co and see if we can't get a banner, because this is a nationally televised event, and I think it would be great for us to have a big turnout at the Grover Beach train station as the cyclists ride by with a sign that says, "Welcome to Grover Beach."
And actually, if you recall, that's right where they call it the OK. And so the speed is going to ramp up. So they basically are under some generally controlled speed until approximately our city limits line. So it's going to be a perfect opportunity.
Great.
For us to do that.
Sounds good. I have three other things, but I'll save those for the next meeting. And I think with that, we are done with council communications. City attorney, you want to cover our closed sessions tonight?
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, council members, members of the public, it is the intent of the council to meet on four items tonight in closed session. First one being the employee evaluation for the city manager. Second one, existing litigation, Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus the City of Santa Maria. Third one, conference with labor negotiators on all of the represented and non-represented units. And the last one, conference with real property negotiators with regard to the terms and conditions of potential leases with Pacifica.
Very good. Thank you. And hold on, just like everyone. I did have one thing that I – there's a lot of folks who would not be happy with me that I did not share. This Saturday, May 9th, 9 a.m. to 12 noon, the third Grover Beach Walk and Roll. Come and join me and others as we start at Ramona Garden Park, and we will be walking up and we'll be walking and visiting businesses on Grand Avenue. So there will be drawings, prizes, discounts. Zoom in. Sorry, I wasn't. Use this camera here. Perfect. There you go. So Saturday, 9 a.m., Ramona Garden Park. Come with your walking shoes. All right. Now, with that, we will recess in a closed session.